Italy. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. And they all started.
This is the Quality News Network. Israeli forces have begun pulling out of southern Lebanon on the second day of the UN-brokered ceasefire. Israel's Army Chief of Staff says the pullout will take 10 days to complete. Meanwhile, the UN is working to assemble a peacekeeping force to replace those troops. In London, British police have detained the 25th suspect in the alleged plot to blow up airplanes over the Atlantic. It's the first arrest in the case. The others are still in custody. Meanwhile, police have raided two internet cafes as part of the investigation. Near Washington, at the National Counterterrorism Center, President Bush said the U.S. is safer than before, but not completely safe. He added that the fight against terrorists could continue for years. In Washington, an agency within the Pentagon is working with Israel to protect the country against attack. The Missile Defense Agency grew out of the Star Wars program initiated in 1983 by then-President Ronald Reagan. In Iraq today, more than a dozen people were killed in scattered violence, including a suicide bombing outside the headquarters of the president's political party. Officials have ordered an indefinite curfew in Karbala, home of some of the most sacred Shia shrines. But the order was largely ignored by gunmen who continued firing at police and soldiers. In Baghdad, the U.S. military says Sunday's blasts that killed 47 people were, in fact, the result of bombings and not a natural gas leak. A Sunni militant group has claimed responsibility. In Gaza City, Palestinian security forces are searching for two Fox News journalists who were abducted yesterday. Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh said security forces would actively work to secure their release. No one has claimed responsibility for the kidnappings. In Iran, a display of more than 200 cartoons that mock the Holocaust opened this week in Tehran. In February, officials announced a contest for the best caricature of the Holocaust. That was in response to a Danish newspaper's publication of cartoons depicting the prophet Muhammad. In Mississippi, a judge has ruled that a couple cannot collect damages from their insurance company for flood damage after Hurricane Katrina. That's because it was not included in their policy. And in Miami, researchers are studying tropical storm systems that start off the African coast. They want to find out why some of them develop into hurricanes such as Katrina and Andrew, and others simply disappear. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new Census Bureau report shows that minority populations are growing in all states but one, West Virginia. Immigrants, both legal and illegal, now make up about 12% of the U.S. population. The housing market continues to slow, with 28 states, including California, Florida, and Arizona, reporting declines in spring sales. Nationally, sales were down 7% in the second quarter compared to last year. The Labor Department reports that in July, overall wholesale prices went up by 0.1%, but excluding food and fuel prices, those level prices fell 0.3%. Staples posted a 19% jump in quarterly profits. The office supply retailer credits high sales in products such as ink, toner and paper, and office furniture. Home Depot reports that second quarter net income rose 5.3% to $1.86 billion. The company says it will spend $350 million to modernize its stores. A billionaire has purchased nearly 3 million shares, or 1.2%, of the Tribune Company, which publishes the Chicago Tribune and Los Angeles Times. Tribune says Nelson Peltz is known as an activist investor. And British air carriers estimate the terrorist plot has so far cost them a total of $570 million. Light sweet crude settled today at $73.05. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 132 points, NASDAQ up 57, S&P 500 up 19. There's more at Q&A.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Where the heck were you guys last night? I'm getting such a look from Agnes. Just playing. I am Bob Kincaid, substantially recovered from some otherwise greenness about the gills. I got hold of something or something got hold of me. One of us didn't agree with it. But I'm back. Stop that. Agnes is over here being licentious and nasty. Me, eat a Republican? I'm tickled to death to be back. It's coming up on 7 minutes after the hour. And I'm screwed up again this week. My Monday got messed up again. And the rest of the week is, let's go ahead and get this out there. The rest of the week is a mess, too.
Oh, yes, it is.
I'm going to be on the road tomorrow.
Yes, we would love
to. With any luck at all, I'm hoping we will have a live show for you broadcast from the studios of our good friend Mark Levine of the Radio Inside Scoop. Come Thursday evening, and then back on the road on Friday. So it looks as though prayer meeting tomorrow will be handled ably by either Bruce and or John, depending on how things work out. So we've got all of that, we're trying to make preservations, as a friend of mine used to say, for the coming week. But I'm pretty sure I will not be on the air tomorrow evening, but most likely Thursday. Now I'll tell you what. Let's go straight to the phone. A new friend joins us from Southern Mississippi, the Sarge. Hey Sarge, how you doing? Welcome to Head On.
How are you doing, Bob? It's nice to listen to you again. I hope you're feeling better than yesterday.
I'm a pale green as opposed to a bright what I was yesterday.
Oh, my goodness, man. That flu will kick your butt, won't it?
I tell you, it was ugly. It was truly ugly.
Bob, I wanted to thank you for your concern about our problems down here in South Mississippi and the Katrina hit area. And I appreciate the fact that you are not scared to speak out on it. You know, it's strange. People don't want to talk about this thing.
And I don't know why.
I don't either. And, you know, it's like these are Americans, and we're really living in like a fourth world situation, Bob. And when you have Americans that are living, eating one meal every 3 days like my twin sister does, or when you have a middle-income person, a good salaried person, that can only eat cereal and milk and lives in a FEMA trailer and has formaldehyde smell all over and can't even stay over the weekend without getting sick, you know, something's wrong. I don't really know what to do about it.
I blame the media for some of this. Of course, I guess that's easy to do, Sarge.
Well, yeah, it is. And the media is to blame. That's why at Powers and Morrison we do cover the Katrina areas really well, because somebody has to, you know, and thanks to people like yourself and Mike Malloy and Randy Rhodes who speak out and say, hey, look, these people are in harm's way. Let's give them a chance to get their stories out and let's do something about them because these are Americans. By George, we can talk all we want to about terror, but the real terror is when you have people living like they're doing on the Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Well, you're absolutely right, and of course it extends on down. I've got a sister in Mobile, Sarge, and so you know I've seen what happens as hurricanes come and go through the Gulf. What we've had with Katrina though is a profound failure. I mean, this isn't they were a little slow getting the electric back on. This is an absolute failure of this entire nation of a significant group of its a portion of its population.
I'll tell you something else, Bob. There's some people that my contacts on the Mississippi coast in Jackson County, especially because it was the worst hit of all of them, have told me that FEMA told them to count on at least a year before they got their money. And as we approach the anniversary, they're still waiting on their money and been told we don't know when we'll get it.
Well, Sarge, it gets even worse, though, because I'm looking at a news story here today that I pulled off of Yahoo News. You got a federal judge down there. And frankly, this is one of those federal judges that, you know, you wouldn't trust. Well, you wouldn't trust him in an outhouse with a muzzle on. He's apparently he's apparently a bought and paid for tool of the Bush administration, and he just ruled today that everybody who this was a single case ruling, but he ruled that if you've got a flood damage claim from Katrina, you can pound sand.
I saw that story, and it just makes me sick. And if you go on my website on the Hurricane Center at Powers and Morrison, you will see that the formaldehyde, they're making excuses about it. I mean, everything that they do, they are making excuses. They're trying. HUD tried to kick people out of their Section 8 housing, which is low-income housing.
Right.
And I fought and finally got it changed. But it's just, I mean, everything, and this governor, oh, God, this governor,
well,
he just adds to it.
Sarge, I got to ask you, because you're the first Mississippian I've gotten to talk to in a while, and, of course, where I grew up about 30 miles from the Mississippi line down there in northwest Alabama. What in heaven's name is wrong with the people of your state? I mean, can I just ask you that bluntly?
I wondered that, too, Bob, because... one thing, the media here has always been controlled. I'm a native of this area, and it has always been controlled. And they are very, very quick to pull any story that doesn't quite fit into the philosophy of the conservative Southern Baptist. And there is your key point right there, is a Southern Baptist.
But, you know, and I'm a recovering one, okay? I mean, I was raised that way. I got over it. But I'm kind of stymied on this because, and I'm wondering if there's political change coming to Mississippi as a result of all of this.
Well, I can tell you this much. Jackson County, Mississippi, will not vote for Trent Lott. And Trent Lott is from Jackson County, Mississippi. Eric Fleming is going to carry it, but the thing is, Eric doesn't have the funds to fight Lott. And if people would go by Eric's website, www.fleming2006.org, and make some contributions, it sure would help us go a long ways in defeating this fella, because he needs to go. He's awful.
Well, I was listening to NPR, I reckon it was Sunday afternoon, and I heard a feature on Pass Christiane. Now, is that Jackson County or is that next county over?
Jackson County is the one closest to Mobile, and it's the one that you don't hear about. Pass Christiane is in Hancock, then you've got Gulfport, Biloxi, and Harrison, and Jackson County has Ocean Springs, Moss Point, and Pascagoula.
Okay.
And, now, a little town called Gaucher, which is a new town, it hadn't been around but about 20 years or so, has really taken the brunt, and the Jackson County Rebuild Jackson County organization is still not completely formed because the funds are so slow getting in. And you know, here we are almost a year in, and and they still are having to set up their organization. In fact, I donated my personal website to the Jackson County Children's Coalition so they would have a website to take donations off of.
Because even the kids are still
out
in the cold.
I had a four-year-old story of a four-year-old girl who lived with a grandmother, and her grandmother had been trying to get her help because she was having such trauma from Katrina and recovery, and she tried to commit suicide.
Jesus.
And a friend of mine saved her and was able to get a hold of Jim Yancey, her help.
Now, Sarge, let me get square on this. The four-year-old tried to commit suicide?
That is right, yes, a four-year-old. She said, she told my friend, when I say she tried to commit suicide, obviously we're not talking about an extensive effort.
I understand.
But she was trying to walk into the water or the bayou, and my friend saw her and saw something wrong, and she said, "Hey, look at my doggy. Come back and check my doggy out. He wants to talk to you." And so the four-year-old responded to that, and when she got up, she said, "The waters took everything I had, and nobody cares. Nobody's trying to do anything for us, and the waters might as well just take me, too."
Jesus, God.
So there you go.
Oh, my God, my God. And, of course, you know, like you said, Sarge, we're coming up on the year anniversary. And, you know, we're worrying about people who are going to blow up planes with bottles of water. I mean, crazy.
Right. It's ridiculous. Bob, I'm going to let you go. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely, Sarge. I hope we'll hear from you again.
You're always welcome at Powers & Morrison.
Well, thank you very kindly, and I will be dropping by there. That's powersandmorrison.com, and you've got your blog there.
That's right. I got two of them.
Okay.
I like the Hurricane section and the old Sarge.
Okay, great, Sarge. I appreciate it. Good hearing from you.
Same here.
Bye now. Yeah, I wandered by there, powersandmorrison.com. It's an excellent site. Good conversation there. And there's a chat room there with some very nice people chatting away. And if any of them are listening at this point in time, I'd like to send out a quick howdy over that way as well. We are a year, pretty much, from Katrina. We're a year from abject devastation. We're a year from wreckage. Homes lost, lives lost, and a world turned upside down in a fashion in which you and I can probably not comprehend. So it just absolutely ran through me like a dose of salts this afternoon when I, as I mentioned to Sarge, it's an AP story I found over at Yahoo. Now, just let this sink in. A federal judge ruled Tuesday that an insurance company's policies do not cover damage from wind-driven water. That's wind-driven water. In a decision that could affect hundreds of upcoming cases related to property damage from Hurricane Katrina. U.S. District Judge L.T. Center Jr. ruled that a Mississippi Gulf Coast couple, same place Sarge is talking about, cannot collect damages from storm surge caused by Katrina. Wait for it, because, you know, you got to get your little hat on and really get tuned in good with the conservative agenda to make this work. Because nationwide mutual insurance companies' policies do not cover wind-driven water damage. Okay, how about tidally driven water damage? Nah. Judge Center, who is a conservative, appointed for life to the federal bench, said Paul and Julie Leonard of Pascagoula, Jackson County, Mississippi, could be compensated for damage that they could prove was caused by high winds, but not if the damage was caused by water pushed by the wind. Yeah, just take a minute. Just take a minute and gnaw on that for a second. The roof gets blown off the house, that you get compensated for. But if the storm surge comes into your house, according to Judge Center, Sunshine, you lose. Nationwide wins. We'll talk. This has more meaning. I mean, it has, believe me, it has plenty of meaning for Paul and Julie Leonard down Pascagoula. But it has even more for others. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to spend a minute or two on this thing because you need to see where that judicial activism we've been hearing about actually is going. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works and other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't, ha 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
I'm a new mother. My baby and I are healthy and happy. But I was shocked to learn that every minute a woman somewhere in the world dies in pregnancy or childbirth. When women can't plan when to get pregnant, or even how many children to have, it puts them and their babies at risk. We can lower these risks for just pennies a day. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. If you are too, call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121. For the cost of the pennies we see lying on our sidewalks, we can make a real difference. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Ready for flow.
jump in that paddle wheel, bump it back, water, keep rolling on fast, just the same.
Oh, back water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on?
Oh, back water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon.
Coming up on 25 minutes after the hour, just a few details, and we'll go to your calls. As the Republicans were so fond of informing us during the Clinton witch hunt, when they had their their curly, twisted, weird little monster fingers clutching away at Bill Clinton's fly, and yeah, we want to see inside. Hey, actions have consequences. That's what we heard. Yeah.
Actions have consequences. What's happened to personal responsibility in America? There's no personal responsibility anymore.
Actions have consequences. Now, I told you about what went down with this court ruling in Mississippi. You need to dig that Judge Center, L.T. Center Jr., who goes home and sleeps quietly at night, probably came from the insurance industry in the first place when he was appointed. He's going to hear most of the billions of dollars of claims against insurance industries, insurance companies, the insurance industry, if you will, by people who were screwed, who, you know, paid and paid and paid and paid. And, you know, some months, you know, it was, well, you know, we're going to be late with the car payment. We're going to be late with the credit card payment. Yeah, but they weren't late with the insurance payment. And they paid and they paid and they paid. And you know what? Just like a good neighbor, State Farm wasn't there. And you weren't in good hands with Allstate. And Nationwide was not on your side, Sunshine. If you lived in the zone of death and destruction that was Katrina. No. And by the way, action, like I said, actions have consequences. Agnes, get me that teletype. Get your microphone open. I need a sound effect here. Come on, help me here. American International Group shares added 73 cents to $62.43. Allstate Corp shares, come on, help me. No, come on. Allstate Corp shares gained 80 cents. Come on, Agnes. Allstate Corp shares gained 80 cents to $57.22. St. Paul Travelers Company shares rose 93 cents or 2.1% to $44.02 on the big board. And Hartford Financial Services Group Inc. shares jumped $1.01 to $82.49, all on the New York Stock Exchange. Because a hateful old man who does not have to bear the consequences of his decisions decided that it's okay to screw people who are just about in the worst possible shape they could ever be in their lives. Actions have consequences. I'm a liberal. I don't want anything bad to happen to Judge Doofus. No. I just want somebody there when he's 90, because these guys live forever. You know, when he's 95 and laying there waiting to go, I want one of these victims to be able to lean down and whisper in his ear, "You bastard, you're going to hell now for what you did." That's what I want, because I'm mean. Let's go to the phones. Richard joins us from North Carolina. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay, you?
Pretty good. Hey, yeah, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. I've still got a bunch of things in my hopper, and I apologize for my hound dog. I think he sees a squirrel outside.
That's okay. We got dogs here, too.
All right. Bruce was talking about this, but I didn't get home from walking the dogs in time to talk to him. But, you know, you should interview the woman who wrote this book, Kingdom Coming, about the rise of Christian nationalism, because she had a lot of interesting things to say. And after I listened to her on an interview on a different program the other day, she mentioned a book called Pink Swastika, and I looked it up on Amazon. It's a book written that claims that the Nazi leadership were all homosexuals. So it's one of these right wing Christian revisionist histories. And I mean, the illogic of that is pretty obvious, because you can go to a copy of Mein Kampf and find page after page where Hitler used Christian rhetoric himself to justify what he was doing, claimed that he was doing the Lord's work, and anti-Semitism itself that he was probably our most vulgar expression of has its roots in Christianity, not in Hinduism, not in Buddhism, or
no.
anything else.
No, you're absolutely right, and this is, you know, this is a rebranding of. I mean, there's some truth, Richard. Ernst Röhm, who headed the Sturmabteilung, the SA, was quite gay, and fairly notorious about it, and that is why on June the 30th, 1934, in part, that's why Hitler rubbed him out.
Oh, I'm not saying that there probably wasn't a.
No, I mean there were some there, but it, no.
In his administration, like there probably are in the Bush administration, in spite of their very opportunistic use of homophobia to get out the vote.
Jeff Gannon, Ken Melman, sure.
Yeah, but that's just an example to me, because when people claim to when people are using Nazis as an example of homosexuality, I don't understand that.
Well, I don't know how a book like this could stand the bright light of reason or any kind of analysis, Richard. Because the fact is, what was it? It was called paragraph 68 or paragraph 168 or no 190. I can't remember. But there was a specific German code provision. That frankly was not taken off the books until the late 60s in Germany that criminalized homosexuality. The Third Reich put homosexuals in prisons just as they made the Jews wear the yellow star. Homosexuals had to wear a pink triangle.
Oh yeah.
And were brutalized in the prison camps in many instances as badly or worse. There's no worse, but you know, as badly as the Jews were. And interestingly, though, all these laws were aimed at male homosexuality. They did not criminalize female homosexuality because it was deemed that, at least they could still breed for the Reich.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was going to call and kind of give you some grief the other day because you were stereotyping lesbians as diesel dykes or bikers, when everybody knows from seeing the videos that they all dress as schoolgirls or cheerleaders.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Lipstick lesbians, sure. And, I play, but, you know.
I know. I'm not playing back.
Yeah.
But one of your other regular callers called, and I think he had a quote arguing that Hitler was anti-Christian. And I know that toward the end when they were getting really desperate, there's stories that they were looking into occultism and trying to find the Ark of the Covenant and all that stuff, just looking for any out to kind of pull their asses out of the fire. But
sure.
There's not really much evidence that Hitler himself was anti-Christian or anyone else in his administration.
Well, no, if you just as you said in Mein Kampf, if you go and you look through the texts of his speeches, it is replete with Christian oratory. And exhorting Christians to rise to the building, you know, to the formation of a new fatherland, and you know all of that, all of that hyperbolic horse hockey.
Sure.
No, he was he intended to take the church along with him, and part and parcel of the shame of the Holocaust is the Roman Catholic Church in Germany's having turned a blind eye to it. You know, the guy who's wearing the funny shoes and the skirt and the Ku Klux Klan hat in Rome now, that guy was a gunner, an anti-aircraft gunner in the Wehrmacht.
Right.
You know, he's a Nazi, and you know we just got to deal with it. The Pope's a Nazi. Okay. I mean, some people, you know, but he is. He is what he is. He was what he was. There's no getting away from it. But you know, apparently the Cardinals felt like it was okay to elevate a Nazi. But
the Cardinals at the time shook hands with Hitler, and there were plenty of pictures of him praying in public and walking out of church and with the Bible in his hand, and things just never change.
No,
but I don't understand that, and like I mentioned in my email to you, if I can repeat the quote I sent to you by Thomas Paine, he said, "Of all the tyrannies that afflict mankind, tyranny in religion is the worst. Every other species of tyranny is limited to the world we live in, but this attempts a stride beyond the grave and seeks to pursue us into eternity." And I don't understand the idea of people calling in to defend democracy and then turning around when there's any criticism of organized religion and warning you that every knee shall bow and warning you that you will believe what they believe under penalty of eternal suffering. And I don't understand how that is supposed to make their religion appealing to anyone, because I was raised Christian, and in fact it is that. And I don't know if there's a phrase I can only paraphrase, a quote I can only paraphrase, something about Christians make more atheists than atheism does, but and that's been pretty much the case for me, because nothing Richard Dawkins or any other atheist is going to say has made Christianity as distasteful to me as what I've heard from Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and these people who command audiences of millions.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, Richard. You know, they command by fear. And frankly, they get people to the polling places again by fear. I mean, I don't know how small-minded, how weak-minded, how pathetic an example of the human race you have to be to actually sit in a pulpit on Sunday and hear somebody tell you that your marriage is going to break up if two guys in San Francisco get towels monogrammed. I mean, how ignorant do you have to be?
Well, why would you be a person who that's being said about and still sit there in the church and listen to it? But that is the case. I know here in my area, we do have the Metropolitan Church. We have the United Church of Christ. And I realize that they do what I think Jim called eisegesis the other day. It's picking out the parts of the Bible that you like and that are convenient for you and discarding the rest. But I think you would have to do some of that yourself to be a homosexual and sit in one of these churches that wasn't a United Church of Christ or a Metropolitan Church.
But I'm not necessarily talking about gay people, Richard. I'm talking about ordinary, you know, love thy fellow man, give the shirt off your back, blah, 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 blah. And then every Sunday you go in for a little hate fest. And instead of talking about the stuff that really matters, they're politicking at you. Now, I go over to agapepress.org. That's the Himmler-esque little press organ of the American Family Association every now and then, and I pull stories from there. And I guarantee you, at any given time that you go over there, there will be a story about what the homosexuals are doing, and there will be a story about how we're defeating America by taking crosses down off mountains and big rocks out of buildings. And all that. And you know what? There won't be a story there about feeding hungry people or clothing the naked or putting a roof over the homeless.
No,
it just won't be there because they're not concerned with it. They're bigots, Richard.
Well,
and it's time we called them for what they are.
And the bigotry didn't come out of the thin air. I mean, there's a source for it, and it's the same source that other people use as the basis of their faith. And I think, I mean, the Bible is a compilation of the writings of a lot of different people, and it was put together by church fathers who had a political agenda.
See, you can't tell that to a fundy, Richard. I don't mean to cut you off or anything, but I mean, we know that. But you cannot tell that to it. It's the inspired word of God. And it
I don't know why God would talk about himself so much in the third person, but that's just me.
Well, I don't know why God would behave like a spoiled brat juvenile through the better part of the Old Testament. But again, that's me. You know, I don't know why God would provide the impetus for the first recorded instance of genocide in world history, but he does in Deuteronomy chapter 20. I don't know why he would say that. I mean, you know, this is perfect wisdom, perfect knowledge. And I had an email from a listener today talking about the fact that there are fun that was out there to be had. Well, I think it's in the Book of Kings or something where it talks about building this thing, and it turns out that in order to have built it the way that pi, you know, good old pi that we all learned, 3.14 ad infinitum. Nope, pi is just 3. You know, never mind. It's just 3.
Because all those decimal places
Well, those are demonic decimals, Richard.
Oh, yeah. So there's plenty of people who love to debunk science when it's convenient for them, but don't shy away from working in scientific fields to make a buck. And a lot of my coworkers are perfect examples.
Well, you know, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago, Jerry Falwell, you know, and he's like huge. I mean, the evil is just exuding itself from him now. He's got jowls that hang to his elbows, and he was in the hospital because he couldn't breathe anymore, and they had to put him on one of those demonic ventilators. But you know what? He didn't, you know, and I'm sure that where he went, you know, the doctors weren't all Smith and Jones. I'm sure there were some Pakistanis and some Indians, maybe some Iranian doctors. And you know what? He didn't hesitate in the least. Let them work on me if they're going to keep me alive, because I don't believe in this heaven crap anymore than I, you know. He's hanging on to every breath.
It's not limited to him. Apparently, Gandhi refused to allow his wife to be treated for, I don't remember if it was malaria or something else, but then later in life, he accepted the same treatment for himself.
Yeah. I mean, there's no end to hypocrisy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's not just limited to Christianity, but because I'm a white Southern male raised in a Christian church, that's the one I know, and that's the one I feel most comfortable with.
Well, that's the one that you have a cultural imperative to try to fix.
Exactly.
You know, I'm the same white male raised in the South as what you are, and it perturbs me to hear from folks like Sarge who call in and tell us, you know, that, you know, while we haven't been watching, they're still suffering on the Gulf Coast. You know, the fact that the nation looked away and there wasn't any more reason for Anderson Cooper to be standing down in the surge, and oh my God, I can't believe, you know, just because they're not there doesn't mean that the problem went away.
Right.
And in fact, the problem has gotten worse. And I love the South. I do. I love where I am now. I love where I was raised. I love all the land in between. I love this entire nation, but I have a cultural connection to the South.
Sure, me too.
And when I see so many good people being led so far astray by a bunch of just filthy charlatans and con men hell bent on bigotry, you know, it's like, you know, well, they can't do it with skin color now, so they're going to do it with sex.
Oh, sure. I had two Jehovah's Witnesses come to my door one day, and one was a black lady, one was a white lady, and I asked them how they can, because they gave me the anti-homosexual rant, and I asked why it's more valid for them to still believe what the Bible says about homosexuality, but to conveniently dismiss everything it said in defense of slavery, and they don't have a good answer for that, because for them, homosexuals are the low man on the totem pole now, and they have to have somebody to look down on. It used to be for white Southerners, poor white Southerners, even during the Civil War, people who weren't slaveholders, they were still a step above the slaves on the social ladder, even if they were indentured servants, just by virtue of the fact that they were white. And these people, no matter how poor and desperate and hard up they are, can still look down on homosexuals, because the preacher is still telling them that they are, that the homosexuals are an abomination.
Yeah. And, you know, frankly, I'm grateful for folks like you who are living down there and hopefully speaking out against this from time to time. That's part of what we try to do here. I don't believe in gay rights. I don't believe in women's rights. I believe in I don't believe in any particularized subgroups' rights. I believe in human rights, Richard.
How did it ever become special rights to treat everyone equally?
Right, and that's what I'm getting at. It's human rights, and frankly, the women's rights people do a disservice to their own cause when they don't embrace what are being referred to as gay rights, and the gay rights people do a disservice to their own cause when they don't embrace women's reproductive rights.
Sure.
Or labor rights, or you know, the right. You know, I mean, do you realize in this country that it is a crime in many instances for a worker now to withhold his labor?
Doesn't surprise me. I think how many states are right to work states now? Something like 18.
So yeah, I mean you're sitting smack dab in the middle of one of them.
I sure am. And I talked to a woman from our Department of Labor one day, just asking her about a workplace issue, and she essentially told me straight up that whatever my employer says goes, and I should stop looking to the law for any difference of opinion.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, right to work is right to be fired. Right to work is right to starve. Right to work is a right to a whole lot of stuff that you and I would not recognize as being even remotely American.
Well, it's funny. I saw that I was flipping through the channels one night, and I saw that television show Monk, which is usually pretty funny and everything, but it just happened to be a scene where there was a strike going on, and the business owner comes out, and he's a short little dumpy guy in a flannel, in a dirty T-shirt under a flannel shirt, just in tears because the people are striking against him. And the strike leader was this slick, mafia-looking guy with a goon standing behind him. And that's the stereotype people have of strikes and union leaders these days, and the poor, besotted, persecuted CEO who's just trying to put food on his table.
Right, and you know you remember the grocery store strike out in Southern California a year and a half or so ago? Forget the name of the market. Well, you know, that grocery store chain just recently quietly pled guilty. Not no contest, not, you know, no, they pled guilty and paid a humongous fine because they got caught bringing in illegal strike breakers during that strike in California, you know, a supposedly liberal state. And they got busted for bringing in, you know, what old-timers refer to as scabs. You know,
unions are really the only democratizing force that the common man has, and it's no wonder that they're being destroyed.
Well, it is no wonder that the attempt has always been on to destroy them, Richard. But I've come to a conclusion, and I think I'm correct in this. Everything that is good. And I do mean everything that is good in modern society has been a direct outgrowth of the attempts of organized labor to make life better. From the 40-hour work week, I've got a buddy who's got a T-shirt that says, "Welcome to the weekend," brought to you by organized labor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Workers' compensation, unemployment compensation. Organized labor was involved in the push to create Social Security. Frankly, organized labor was involved in creating the teaching facilities that led to the civil rights movement.
Right.
And I've reached a conclusion, Richard, and that is, and it's frustrating for us as liberals and progressives. We look about and we say, where's the leader going to come from? Where is our leader? When will a person rise up and lead us on and will defeat this conservative hate and move America toward what America can be for all of us? Where are they? Are they in this movement or that movement? Are they blah, 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 blah? There's only one place. If America is to be saved, it will be saved from one place, Richard. It will be saved from labor, because it has always been labor.
Sure, because that cuts across all the other lines that divide us sometimes.
Right. And frankly, the ball is in labor's court. And if labor doesn't figure it out, and if labor doesn't get the job done, I'm afraid that we all may be done for. But I have to have faith that labor will figure it out. There's a lot of dynamic, bold, brilliant people in the labor movement right now who are working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to try to bring America back to its former greatness. And we have to give them a voice, and that's part of what the Head On Radio Network's about.
Yeah, we do have to make sure that people don't fall for the revisionist history version of things, thinking that it was all the Carnegies and the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers who made America great, and forget about the working people and the people in the street who actually were out there. And as demonized as activists are these days, and I don't understand that when you look back and see that it was not only all the labor rights that you mentioned, but also women's suffrage and the civil rights movement. These were all activist groups. There wasn't any war fought to win the right for women to vote. There wasn't any war fought to win the right for a black to vote or any of that. There were people in the street exercising their constitutional rights.
Yep. It kind of paints the picture out there pretty plain for you, doesn't it? For all of us.
It does. All right. That's all I got tonight.
Richard, you take care. Good to hear from you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And rolling on, Ray calling from Louisiana. Ray, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good. Glad to be here.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. Thanks for calling.
I wanted to call and thank you for, I was one of the guys who were chatting with you Friday night, and I just got off the chat board with Sarge, and we said, he said to go ahead and open the board for your audience to go ahead and dial in log on and chat.
Okay, well, we'll have to get a little cross pollination going, because the invitation extends equally well over to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room.
Well, okay, sounds good.
Yeah, wander by. We'll wander by, and that's now. It's pretty easy. Just powersandmorrison.com, right?
That's correct. You just hit chat, and then it'll log you in.
Okay, good deal. How's things down your way? You're in Baton Rouge, right?
Baton Rouge, yeah. It's okay. We're recovering, except for a lot of the refugees. Or the people, the evacuees, the victims are still around. A lot of them are, and it's causing some problems. But you know, we're getting around it.
Well, I tell you what, reading Sarge's accounts and just trying to keep up with what's going on down there. I'll be quite honest. It's easy to not pay attention, Ray.
Yeah.
And I think it would behoove us all to pay more attention and to keep pressure on our elected leaders to the extent that they respond to us, of course.
Sure. I had to go down to New Orleans about a month after the hurricane. My sister and mom lived down there, and they found out the power was back on, so we had to go check the house out and everything.
How did you find things?
Well, they were okay. They were in the Garden District, and they were kind of sheltered from another building that got some of the damage, but other than that, it's just they're still rebuilding. The streetcars aren't working down St. Charles because they don't have the cables up yet.
And I was reading something that law and order is still a significant issue. A judge threatened to release everyone who was in jail because. The legal defense, you know, oddly enough, I guess this is just one of those things we don't worry about so much, dadgummit. The legal aid, you know, the people who defend the people who can't afford a lawyer.
Right.
They're absolutely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
and can't get representation to people who are sitting waiting in jail for exactly that representation. And one judge said, I'm turning them loose.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's stuff that's below the surface there. That we, you know, we really haven't fleshed out yet, like this insurance story. My God, this thing just—it's horrifying. We're talking about billions of dollars, and the first shot has just been fired to tell people who in Mississippi who had their homes literally destroyed that they're not going to get paid.
Sure, but you know what I don't understand is the fact that if a branch gets blown into a house by the wind, it's covered, but water.
Well, right. That's the if the branch is blown, if the tree is blown over onto the house, it's covered. But if the tree is wet, it's not.
That's not logical.
No, but logic. Logic doesn't play a part in this.
That's true. That's true.
This is about
the Republicans.
Well, we're not just talking. It's not just about the Republicans. It's about a very particular sector of the Republicans, and that is the real. Now, I mean, you know, not the religious fundamentalists or anything. Those are just the shock troops. These are the Republicans who matter. Mm-hmm. These are the guys with the serious money.
Yeah.
And this particular case that the decision came out on today. The people, the family claimed, the Leonards, they claimed $130,253 in total damage to their home. Now, of that, wind, just wind, the part that should be covered, wind caused $47,365 in damages. Would you care to guess how much Nationwide had paid to date?
Probably nothing.
$1,661, Ray.
Same difference.
Yeah. And these people, you know, the Sisters of Mercy are not going to rebuild these people's house.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to rebuild these people's house. They don't want, you know, these people don't want charity. I mean, you know that better than I do. I'm here. You're there.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a charity issue. These are people who paid their daggum bills.
Yes.
And all they're asking is for the insurance company to honor their end of the contract.
Right.
And it's the last thing in the world the insurance company wants to do. And frankly, it's a finger that points to the desperate need for reform that we have in this country. You know, we don't need tort reform. We don't need governmental reform. We need corporate reform.
Yeah.
You know, the Nationwide Insurance has the same rights that you and I have under the Constitution because they are deemed a person.
Right.
And yet, they do not have the same duties and responsibilities that you and I do. If you or I sold a car to somebody, and it turned out to be a clunker and didn't run, and we got sued, they'd say, "Hey, Pay the people their money back. Nationwide, they say, hey, take a walk. And that, I mean, that's where the reform's got to come from. And I'm hoping it can start in the South, Ray. Honest to God, I am.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Bob.
Well, it's such a pleasure talking to you, and I'll bounce back into the chat room, and folks can wander over there to powersandmorrison.com, and like I said, the invitation is outstanding for you. You know, let's make a little neighborhood here.
Sure, okay.
All right, you take care, Ray.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
I did. Friday evening I went over to Powers and Morrison just to say howdy, because I'd heard, frankly, I'd heard Sarge talk about him in listening to Malloy. It sound like fine folks, and lo and behold, turned out it was. We've got to build community, because we're all going in the same direction. We might as well all try to work like that. Now, this is an Associated Press story. If you want to get more details on it, I encourage, because I cannot imagine being Mr. and Mrs. Leonard, Paul and Julie Leonard from Pascagoula. They've got damage to their home to the tune of $130,253. If we agree for the sake of argument that wind caused $47,000 of that nationwide. Nah, like I said, they're not on your side. Because it's been a year now. Can you, you ever had to wrestle with an insurance company? It is not a pleasant undertaking. These people had to go and get a lawyer. On a hurricane. On $130,000 worth of damage. Because Nationwide, who's on your side, ponied up $1,600 on a $130,000 claim. Now see, we got the wood put to us here in West Virginia a year or so ago. Because the insurance industry and the United States Chamber of Commerce put full-page ads in the newspapers around here and said, we won't be able to do business in West Virginia no more if you don't keep them evil plaintiffs from a-suing us. So we lost the right in West Virginia to sue an insurance company for bad faith. You know, when you file a claim with them for $130,000 and they send you a check for $1,600 and say, like it! Or lump it. See, that's what you call bad faith. But see, so many of these southern states, they have no concept of actually holding an insurance company's feet to the fire. Oh, no. Couldn't do that. That wouldn't be Christian. Read this story. The couple's attorney asked for more than $158,000 for the damage to the house and its contents, plus interest and attorney's fees and expenses. Now wait, because here's the best part. Judge Center, however, who's a conservative, ruled that Nationwide only owed the Leonards about $1,228 more than what the company has already paid them for wind damage. Now, wait a minute, wait. Let's go back to the other paragraph. The Leonards had estimated the total damage to their home at $130,253. They said $47,365 in damage was caused by wind. Nationwide paid only $1,661, blaming the remainder on the storm surge. Now let's move down another paragraph and read that again. Judge Center, however, ruled that Nationwide only owed the Leonards about $1,228 more than what the company already has paid for wind damage. Do the math. $1,600 plus $1,200, that's $2,600. Yeah, okay, $3,000. $3,000 for a life. They paid more than $3,000 a year in their homeowners policy premiums, I'll warrant. Nationwide is on your side. No, it ain't. The plaintiff's lawyers might have been, but, you know how that goes. Every 4 years you get this this push for tort reform. Jesus Christ. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is a quality news network. As the United Nations works to put together an international peacekeeping force, Israeli forces began pulling out of southern Lebanon today. One official estimated the whole process could take 10 days. Lebanon is expected to begin deploying its own troops there on Thursday. Those troops will be aided by the peacekeeping force. Officials from Turkey, Pakistan, Malaysia, and France are expected to meet tomorrow to discuss assembling that force. In northern Israel, residents are emerging from bomb shelters, while in southern Lebanon, displaced residents are returning to the area. In London, British police have detained the 25th suspect in the alleged plot to blow up airplanes over the Atlantic. It's the first arrest in the case. The other suspects are still in custody. Some firearms were found in a wooded area near the site where some of the suspects were arrested. The Washington Post reports that millions of dollars sent from Britain for Pakistani earthquake relief were transferred to help finance the plot. The paper quotes officials as saying that less than half of the $10 million was actually used for relief operations. In Iraq today, more than a dozen people were killed in scattered violence, including a suicide bombing outside the headquarters of the president's political party. Officials have ordered an indefinite curfew in the Shiite city of Karbala. An average of 110 Iraqis were killed each day in July. That's according to the Iraqi Health Ministry. Overall, more than 3,400 civilians were killed in violence last month, making it the deadliest month in Iraq so far. In Pakistan, authorities arrested 27 Taliban fighters in a private hospital. All of them were Afghans. Some were wounded battling NATO forces in Afghanistan. In Iran, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has announced his country's response to the incentives package aimed at stopping Tehran's nuclear program. No. He says Iran will not bow to Western pressure and maintains Iran has a right to develop nuclear power for peaceful purposes. In the Indian Ocean, a Japanese oil tanker spilled more than 1 million gallons of oil after it collided with a cargo ship. It's the largest ever spill involving a Japanese tanker. A federal judge has ruled that U.S. agriculture officials violated federal environmental and endangered species laws in Hawaii. Those officials permitted Hawaiian companies to plant genetically modified sugarcane and corn crops on four islands. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
A new Census Bureau report says that minority populations are growing in all states but one, West Virginia. Whites are now a minority in California, Texas, New Mexico, and Hawaii. The National Association of Home Builders says U.S. home builder optimism has fallen to its lowest level in 15 years. For the first time in more than a decade, Walmart's quarterly profit has fallen. The company partly blames the 20 6% drop on costs associated with selling its stores in Germany. Reuters reports that Wall Street bonuses will rise 15% this year. Investment bankers and equities traders will receive even bigger bonuses with more merger activity and rising stocks. Bankrupt auto parts maker Delphi is reporting a second quarter loss of $2.3 billion. That's partly due to an early retirement program and buyouts for its hourly workers. 3M has announced a $1 billion stock buyback plan. The company plans to use the money for corporate purposes. India has invested $1 billion in a plan to develop oil and mining projects off Africa's Ivory Coast. Officials estimate more than 60,000 barrels can be produced there each day. Bayer Pharmaceuticals reports fourth quarter earnings of more than $82 million. Light sweet crude settled today at $73.05. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 132 points, NASDAQ up 57, S&P up 19. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes past the hour, hour number two, as our good friend Brian Redner noted. I'm Bob. This is Head On. I'm tickled to death to be back. Just a couple of more details from this story of the screwing of Mississippi, so you'll know. A quote here from Joseph Anati, spokesman for the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. From our perspective, it lifts a very large cloud of uncertainty that has been hanging over the insurance market of the Gulf Coast. A healthy insurance market is absolutely key to a rejuvenated economy down there. Yes, it is. A healthy insurance market is key to the recovery of the Gulf Coast. After all, we all know that the Gulf Coast economy runs not on the labor of middle-class America, but on the ability of life insurance and satellite salesmen to go from door to door to sell policies to people who don't need them, because when they wind up in court, they won't, be getting paid anyway. Bastards. Just despise them. I remember many and many a year ago in that kingdom by the sea, 1L, the guy who taught torts, would pick out you, well, and it was uniformly a lovely young lady who was going to go and clerk in one of the big insurance defense law firms. And he instructed her that he would not be calling on her to brief any cases, to give any answers, that her only job all year long was when, every time that he yelled, insurance company says, her only job was to stand up proudly and say, we don't pay. And you know what? She thought she was getting a comfortable assignment, but, you know, she had to be there every day, because every day that guy would have another instance of a case where an insurance company had said, we don't pay. And frankly, they've got battalions, brigades of lawyers. Brigades, whatever, I don't know. Whose sole job is to walk around courthouses, in this case in Mississippi, and say, Your Honor, we don't pay. It's not part of the policy language. And I don't know how people like that sleep at night. I guess you just compartmentalize your existence and you move on. You know, well, dear, how was your day today? It was wonderful. I screwed 1,400 people. Oh, yay. Shall we have Chateaubriand for dinner? Only if we can have lobster, too. I hate him, I hate him, I hate him, I hate him. Let's go to the phones. Jim joins us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. Jim. Oh, Jim. Ground control to Jim. Okay, don't drop him back to hold. Okay. All right, doggone it. But that, you know, that's what you get. This there is an extension to all of this. Because, by the way, if you think this is something that only happens on the Gulf Coast, think again. The money industry in this company in this country has absolutely been allowed to run riot. I've got something here. If I can find it real quick, I want to share it with you. It came from a listener. It's a little essay about, life in these United States. Might take me a second to find it, but this is going to be worth your effort. Yeah, here it is. Take this into account. This begins with a quote. Quote, Larry was raised to believe that if you worked hard and did a good job, you could earn financial security for yourself and your family. We all believed that, unquote. And the listener, Paul, writes, yeah, it was kind of a bitch to find out that this isn't necessarily true. It's more like a rule of thumb. It doesn't always work, but it's still your best shot, providing you can avoid disease, divorce, and disaster generally. However, it's a heck of a however. As long as we continue to allow Republicans to govern, there will be more of the same. The only people who will get ahead or even survive are those who work for insurance companies, the energy industry, and banks. We live in a country which used to produce everything. Cars, appliances, steel, aluminum, copper, enough food to feed the world, and enough energy to sustain itself. We are rapidly reducing our once broad production capacity to a single commodity. Credit. We don't make motorcycles, but we'll certainly help you buy one with a reasonable monthly payment plus the credit insurance. Gotta have that. After all, what if you get depressed that your income doesn't keep pace with your expenses and go for a ride on your cycle and get yourself killed? Surely you don't want us to have to write off that debt and take a loss, do you? We have traded compassion for commerce. Boy, I tell you what, write that one on the blackboard, would you? We have traded compassion for commerce. God for gold, yada, yada, yada. We will tolerate war, hunger, and homelessness, but by golly, we won't tolerate Chapter 7 of the Bankruptcy Code. Besides, if you're in too much debt, the thing you need to do is refinance. In other words, borrow even more money from somebody else. You can now not only rob Peter to pay Paul, you can go to Lending Tree and shop among John, Thomas, Timothy, Luke, and Matthew, too, when Peter needs repaid, but stay the hell away from Judas. The really weird thing is the lending industry economy that we are currently marginalizing ourselves into used to be called usury, and it was a sin, a fairly grave sin for a Christian. Now, our economy is defined by usury. We're a nation of institutionalized greed. A relatively marginal few can simply let their investments work for them, while the rest of the populace works for the wealth that becomes the payoff on those investments. We are struggling and working harder and harder to earn enough money to pay our creditors who don't have to work at all to collect our hard-earned money. Back when this country still vaguely recalled the concept of usury, the states used to have usury laws, which prohibited unfairly high interest rates on loaned money. Then one day, a bank paid a lawyer to research the usury laws of every state to determine which state had the most creditor-friendly usury laws. The winner was South Dakota. The bank reincorporated itself as a South Dakota corporation and wrote its cardholder agreements to be interpreted under South Dakota law. South Dakota was so pleased with this result that they eliminated their usury laws completely to encourage more banks to reincorporate there. Other states quickly followed South Dakota's example. When the regulating body is so desperate for the regulated industry's business that they abdicate the responsibility to govern, then you have a very big tail wagging too small a dog. He says, okay, rambling tirade is nearly over. In short, If you really want to provide a good future for your kids, stop subsidizing tax cuts with deficit spending. Invest in real estate and teach your kids to grow food, to fish, to hunt, to raise animals. After all is said and done, having a place to call your own that can produce a bounty of food is still the only way to guarantee the survival of the species and our own special progeny. If the interdependent economy finally collapses and results in the richly deserved slaughter of the wealthy, you and yours will still have your daily bread. If I'm wrong, then at least they'll still have a place to live and play and some nice pets and hobbies. Man, that's a mouthful. Thanks, Paul. We have traded compassion for commerce.
All the business of America's business.
Calvin Coolidge, darn fool. You know, he was one of the ones that helped birth the Great Depression.
The business of America's business. Hand me another lark's vomit canapé, please.
Do you, I mean... This problem, it blossomed, you understand. The bud of it happened on the Gulf Coast, and it blossomed, and it is blossoming all across this country. I'll bet you, if you're not one of them, you know someone who is a paycheck away from disaster. We have negative savings. We have negative savings in this country. Now, averages being what averages are and mathematics being the magic that I don't fully understand, but I think I've got a little bit of a grasp of, that means in order to have negative savings, we've got to have more people with no savings and debt than we've got people with savings and debt. Negative savings in America. Why? Well, because we've been promised that if we just outsource one more job, by God, everything will be wonderful. Or if we just pass one more tax cut for Nationwide and Citibank. Why, a new dawn will rise on that city on the hill that Ronnie Reagan told us about. This is where we are. What will you do? Because someday it will be you. What will you do when it is you in the shoes of Julie and Paul Leonard in Mississippi? What will you do when it's you? Is it worth? Shall we be the ant or the grasshopper? Are you willing to do the hard work of the ant now in hopes that someday, by helping others, it may not someday be you? And I'm not talking about the Red Cross or the Little Sisters of Charity. I'm talking about on the ground with your feet in the street stopping these SOBs who are stealing your government from you while you watch them. Is it worth it? And the question that I'm going to try to ask it every evening, I was asked to ask it, and I don't have a problem asking it. What will you do if the elections don't come off in November, by the way? What does America mean to you? How much does America mean to you? Let's try this again and go to the phones. Jim, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
There you are. Doing good.
Oh, well, you know, today I called to get my absentee ballot.
Uh-huh.
Woman said, well, I said he would have got it. And I said, in my best Teutonic voice, look here, I'm going to have to tighten you up. It's the 15th. That's when they're supposed to go out. And so she got on her stick and got that thing in the mail to me today.
So you're going to have an honest-to-God paper ballot to vote on, Jim?
I have to vote absentee, Bob, because I'm disabled and I can't be around crowds. And
well, I understand that. That means you won't have to vote on one of these abominable machines.
I wouldn't vote on one anyway.
Well, see, if you show up to the polling place, you don't get a choice.
Well, that's the reason I can't show up. I wish I could show up to the polling place because I'd probably take a hammer and stick it right through the cathode ray tube or whatever they got on that thing. And I'd be hauled off to jail. But nonetheless, I think those machines are the worst thing that ever happened.
Well, do us a favor, would you, Jim, especially those of us in West Virginia. You know me. I've got a little skeptical streak. When you get your absentee ballot, if it's an honest-to-God paper ballot that you can mark on and put a little X somewhere, let us know. Because you know what? I may have to be absentee in order to vote because I refuse to use those damn machines.
Well, you know, I just put one X and that's D. That's what I do.
Easiest way to vote.
And you know, I don't mind telling people how I do vote. And, you know, I feel like that this is going to be a critical election. But, you know, you're going on about these insurance companies. I mean, let's face it, they are protected by the new priesthood of this country, and those are the lawyers, okay? I mean, we got more lawyers in law school right now than we got lawyers that are practicing, okay? And each one is trying to get a piece of the action, and these insurance companies have legions and legions of lawyers that they retain. And the average person, simply, unless they have deep enough pockets, they can't fight them.
Well, you know, they're not. That's one thing. You're largely correct, Jim.
And the lobby that these guys have in Congress? Lord.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It is time for real reform. It is time to push for it.
I don't know how it will be done. It will take a miracle from heaven to really change this business of having the finest government that money can buy.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't take so much something from heaven as it takes something with boots on the street.
Well, the Lord helps those who help themselves, my friend.
Right, and I'm a firm believer in help. You know, what did Thomas Edison say? I'm a firm believer in luck, and I find the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Exactly. As John Kennedy once said, God's work must truly be our own. And I really believe that.
Yeah. Well, when we make it our own, there's a lot more likelihood of it getting done.
Yeah, and the government we have, and I was talking about that earlier, you know, and I want to run this by you, and it may sound cynical and lacking in ideological aspirations, but what is the, you know, as far as the way I see it, the principal function of government is to do one thing, and that is to keep you in line. They say promote the general welfare. But let me tell you something. You get out of line and you see how well your general welfare is promoted, okay? You think, I mean, think about it.
No, I understand. I disagree with you.
But, I mean, that's just the way I see it and the way I've seen it. And as I said earlier, as a principal organizing force in the society that the government keeps in line, one of its major mobilizing principles is war and fear.
And fear, yeah. Don't leave fear out.
And, you know, and that is, in my opinion, the way things work. And, of course, you've got the politicians at the top who get the underlings, like the career civil service people and the military, to do the unthinkable for them.
Well, now, do you believe that's always been the way it is? Because I like to think that...
Essentially.
Well, you know, there have been attempts to make it otherwise.
And they've all failed miserably.
FDR, the Great Society. I don't think either of those failed, Jim. I think that they were destroyed deliberately because for the exact opposite reason. They were succeeding.
Well, let me put you another case. Bismarck initiated a number of reforms, such as Social Security, workman's compensation, health care, and things of that nature. When Churchill came over in the early 1900s, he saw what Germany was doing, and he said, my God, in England, the only thing we have is the workhouse and the poor farm. And that's the poor farm in this country, I guess, you know, he was talking about. And they wanted to institute some of those reforms in Britain that Germany had. But why did Bismarck do that? Not out of the goodness of his Iron Chancellor's heart. He did it because he wanted to put those programs in place so that the radical elements would sing their bird call in vain. And that's exactly the reason that a lot of the programs came under in this country was to prevent a revolution. These people were far-sighted enough.
Well, there is an argument
to save their own skins by not having a revolution like they had in Russia.
There is an argument to be had. You know, there are a lot of people who point out the fact that Huey Long was pointing toward a social welfare state before Franklin Roosevelt ever got hold of it, and that he co-opted Social Security from Huey Long to stop Huey's populism. That's a possibility, but I did, you know, things like workers' compensation. at least in the United States, they didn't happen because of a hue and cry necessarily from the employing class. Because what it was is it was the first tort reform, quite frankly. Because working people traded away their ability to sue the company in exchange for a modicum of compensation that the company then said, okay, well, you know, if you were injured in the scope of work and in the course of work and you were doing work, then you just get paid. And it benefited the employing class, Jim. But
well, it benefited everybody, I think. I mean, certainly it was a vast improvement over what they had before, which was nothing.
Well, they had the ability to sue the company.
But how successful were they, Bob? Not very, 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 I don't think.
No, because you also had a combination of factors, things like master-servant doctrine, things like pure contributory negligence, which is still held on to in several of the southern states even to this day, that said if you're even 1% negligent in the cause of your own injury, you don't collect. But lawyers didn't work for free.
No.
And it saved a boatload of money. Now, I would like to go back to what you said about all the lawyers out there today. It is worth remembering that they're not all evil.
No,
there are a lot of good people out there laboring in the law, working to do things like hold insurance companies to account.
But I would dare say that a majority of them are probably in the camp of the insurance companies, that these people that you're referencing are in a definite minority. I don't think they're in the majority, to tell you the truth. Now, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am, but it would appear to me as though, you know, that's where the money is. And these guys, when they spend 3 years getting a Juris Doctor, they want to go out and they want to get a, in many cases, and they'll tell you this openly, well, when they pass the bar, I have my license to lie, rob, cheat, and steal.
Well, there's another side of that, though, Jim. The guy who goes out there and works the plaintiff's bar, he's got a chance of whistling home one evening with the case that will set him free forever. You know, a multi-million-dollar case.
Well,
the guy that works for the insurance company, he's going to labor for 30 years in the trenches, you know, and maybe he gets $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000, $150,000 a year. But there is an equal siren song calling to people who are spirited enough to go out there and try it on their own. They've got to have the mindset too.
Well, John Edwards is a good example of that. I mean, he won one or two or three or four landmark cases that certainly put him on easy street, as well as helped a lot of other people.
Oh, I remember it very well, Jim, because I remember how the right wing trashed him. One of the cases that he won was of a little child who had their insides sucked out by a defective hot tub or swimming pool or something.
Right.
And he was called an ambulance chaser for that.
Well, you know, the insurance companies, they have a lot of money and they can buy a lot of press and a lot of it's negative, and they can certainly take a good man's reputation and drag it right through the mud. And that is regrettable. And not acceptable, in my opinion. But I'm afraid that, you know, we live in an ultra-capitalist country in which cash is king and money is the god of all people. And, you know, that's part of the problem.
But, see, I don't necessarily see that the legal system itself is at fault here. The problem here, you know, we have had hammered over our heads for the last 5-6 years this idea of activist judges, Jim. I'm sure you've heard the phrase as often or more than I have. And an activist judge is defined by these filthy right-wingers as being someone who refuses to uphold making every child pray to a specific God, a specific prayer every morning. That's an activist judge. An activist judge is somebody who steps in and says that the 14th Amendment applies to gay people as well as to straight ones. That's an activist judge. I submit to you, Jim, that the real definition of an activist judge is a guy who can look at an insurance policy that covers wind damage and say, but if there was water in the wind, the insurance company doesn't have to pay. That is sophistry on a professional level.
Now, I want to ask you something. Where did they get that public law that would allow them to hide behind that?
There's no law. This is a judge's ruling. This is his. This is
a judge rule.
This is his.
If it's dry, you get paid. If it's wet, you don't.
That's what it boils down to. Yeah.
And this came out of the Katrina incident?
Yeah, this is the first case among billions of dollars worth of cases, hundreds if not thousands of cases, that has been tried by this Judge Center, L.T. Center, a federal district judge, most likely a Bush appointee, or some Republican appointee. And he said, and this isn't public law, this isn't a statute that he's interpreting. He's got the four corners of the contract in front of him, Jim, and he's looking at it and he's saying the insurance company wins.
Well, if you have flood insurance, would it pay for that?
The flood insurance would, yeah.
But those people without flood insurance, unless the tree is dry, are SOL.
Right.
Well, it would appear to me as though if you're in a hurricane, trees are going to get wet, and that's just part and bag and baggage of the policy that the person has purchased in good faith.
Exactly.
Does it say that in the exact wording of the policy that they signed?
No.
Well, I would think that decision could.
Okay. Here is his reading. He says the reading of the policy would mean that an insured whose dwelling lost its roof in high winds and at the same time suffered an incursion of even an inch of water could recover nothing under his nationwide policy. And then he turned around and said that, you know, and these people had proven damages, Jim. They had proven damages of at least on a $130,000 loss, $47,000 of it was wind only. All right. Now but the judgment says, if my reading of this story is correct, that Nationwide owes them $1,200.
Well, that simply does not pass the common sense test, because when you have wind, you're going to have water, and obviously, you know, that is just ridiculous.
Well, for
and
me,
I hope that can be overturned.
Well, you're talking about
at what level is this judge? Is he?
He's a federal district judge, U.S. District Court, Southern District, U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Mississippi.
So the next level would be where Atlanta.
Either that or New Orleans. They split one of those circuits off. It may be the 5th, it may be the 11th. I can't remember which. But that's no help, because that court is staffed and peopled by monsters every bit as conservative as this cretin is. And the next step from there is the next step from there is the United States Supreme Court, and you know what you get there.
I won't think they would seek much relief for those people. No, I don't.
And the thing is, this is Julie and Paul Leonard sitting there weeping into their hands because, by the way, they've still got a mortgage to pay on a house that doesn't exist anymore. And they're weeping into their hands tonight.
And these people have no coverage on their loan to take care of something like that?
I don't know.
Well,
but the fact is, they're sitting there weeping into their hands tonight, and 100 or 1,000 other Mississippians are doing the same darn thing, Jim, because this judge is going to rule the same way. He has to now. He has to rule the same way on every case. If there is policy language, even remotely like this Nationwide policy, then everybody who has an insurance claim in southern Mississippi is, for all intents and purposes, screwed.
That is indeed regrettable. That is, but like I say, the insurance company has an extremely powerful lobby in Washington, and they have a lot of influence with the current administration because they are the big business and they do have deep pockets, and they can afford to take care of their own interests and not to pay the claims that they should pay. But I'll tell you one thing, if you should have a policy, but the crux of the issue is whether or not they had flood insurance or not. Is that right?
Well,
the flood insurance protection.
No, they did not have flood insurance. Part of the issue raised was the fact that the Nationwide agent told them that they didn't need flood insurance, that they were covered.
I'm sorry. Would you run that by me again? I didn't catch it.
One of the points they raised at trial was the fact that their insurance agent, their Nationwide insurance agent, they claimed that he told them they didn't need flood insurance.
And where were these people living?
It's Pascagoula, Mississippi.
Well, isn't that a pretty water-prone area, like near the Gulf Shore?
It is on the Gulf Shore.
Well, I believe if my Nationwide insurance company had told me something like that, I would have told him to go straight to hell and gone down the street to somebody else, because he didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Because obviously, if you live in a floodplain like that.
But he was selling an insurance policy, Jim. He told them they didn't need it. It's covered.
Oh, he said they didn't need it. It was covered.
It's in the policy. And, of course, he got on the stand and said, no, it didn't.
And it wasn't in the policy.
Not according to Nationwide. But, you know, in insurance companies, Jim, this is all so Byzantine and labyrinthine. Insurance companies have some of the finest scientific research arms of any business in this country. They are in the anticipation business.
Oh, actuarial tables, everything.
Sure.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And again, referencing that vast army of lawyers that Nationwide Insurance Company has. Do you think for an instant that this policy wasn't written with exactly this circumstance in mind?
I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing. If I had bought that policy, I would have made sure that, you know, every I was dotted and every T was crossed, because that's the only way you can fight these people, is to fight them on their own ground and make sure that what they're telling you is the truth. And, you know, if you have to take it to someone else and have it examined, you know, I hate to say it, but you really can't trust a lot of people.
Well, it all
what you have to do is take it to an attorney who's decent and who is fairly honest, and he will try to get through the legalese and tell you exactly what your benefits are and what they're not and what clauses they can hide behind.
Well, I'm being told by the research department of the Head On Radio Network, otherwise known as Bruce Birch, that Judge Center is, of course, a Reagan appointee.
Well,
so that just, you know, that tells us just about everything we need to know, because the, you know, while they scream that, you know, if you ever voted Democrat once, that you're a liberal activist judge, while they scream that, the real truth is the activist judges have been packed onto the court by Reagan, by Bush 1, and God knows by Bush 2.
Well, I don't know. Well, listen, I thank you for your time. And
my pleasure, Jim.
I urge you to, like I say, if you want to vote absentee, you can. There are certain rules that, you know, that apply. And believe you me, it's a lot easier to vote absentee when you can sit down in your living room and you can look at that ballot and you can decide what you want to do. If you're going to split your ticket, who you wish to vote for, or whether you want to put a big X on D or R or whatever you do, it's a lot less taxing and a lot more conducive to what the election process is all about, in my opinion. You don't have anybody waiting behind you, and you can mail them in, or they send you a stamp thing, and you can apply starting today, and you can vote as early as the 26th.
Well, I think that's what I'm going to wind up doing.
Well, if any of those rules apply to you, then you do it, because let me tell you, I kind of used to enjoy going to the polls and things like that, but I'm just not able to anymore, and that's just a misfortune that I have. But in a way, at least I know my vote will be counted. It may be counted late, because absentee ballots, I think, are counted last.
They are. They are.
But anyway, at least I hope that they're just not thrown into some dustbin somewhere. You never can tell what's going to happen with this crowd, can you?
No, you can't. I have no confidence in the integrity of this machine.
Well, again, thank you for your time.
Jim, have yourself a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
We'll be talking to you soon.
God bless.
You too. Bye. And let's take a quick break. Your phone calls are, of course, welcome. I hope you don't think I'm beating a dead horse on this thing, but I read this case today, and there are 9 dozen things wrong in it, and 9 dozen things that it points to that are wrong. This is a systemic failure. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Building has every convenience. It's gonna make life easier. listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Brotherhood of Carpenters is celebrating 125 years of building trade unionism this month. Gene Tenner of the Chicago Regional Council of Carpenters says the union got started in Chicago, and there are still compelling reasons today to belong to the union.
They're more likely to have a safe workplace. They're more likely to get fair pay for what they're doing. They'll become the best trained tradesmen you can find anywhere, and they can retire with dignity.
Tenner says one of the biggest modern challenges for the Carpenters Union is to figure out how to protect its members' interests while also partnering with employers.
Working with our partners in business as a unified group, working labor and management, working side by side to the benefit of each is a relatively new concept, but contractors and developers don't have jobs without carpenters, and carpenters don't have jobs without developers and contractors. So,
in the wake of an escalated terrorist alert level, New York City's Metropolitan Transportation Administration is still considering reducing manned security checkpoints. Jesse Russell has details.
Extra security measures were put in place following the terrorist attacks on New York City on September 11, 2001. The MTA is considering plans to roll back some of those measures that call for manned security checkpoints and replacing them with cameras and alarm systems. The move has come under fire from the Bridge and Tunnel Officers Benevolent Association. The union represents many of the workers who currently operate the security checkpoints, and they say reducing a human presence will put commuters and the city in danger. Two of the checkpoints targeted for a reduction in manpower include the Midtown Tunnel and the Verrazano Bridge. Both are considered viable terrorist targets.
The United Steelworkers have a political ally in former U.S. Senator John Edwards. Edwards is calling on Continental Tire to collectively bargain with the steelworkers rather than try to impose $32 million in concessions and close down production at the Charlotte, North Carolina plant. Edwards noted in a letter to Continental CEO that the cuts imposed by the company will gut health insurance coverage for hundreds of retirees and their families. Senator Edwards called on Continental to respect its workers and bargain collectively through their union, the United Steelworkers. As Jesse Russell notes in today's economic report, young workers had a deadly 2005.
2005 was a dangerous year to be young and on the job. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has released their annual census of fatal occupational injuries. While the number of fatal work injuries in 2005 was down 1% from 2004, the number of workers under the age of 20 fatally injured on the job rose sharply. According to the census, the rate was up 18% over 2004. Amounting to 166 cases of fatalities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back. 17 minutes and change before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On Tuesday evening. And we go straight to the phones because somewhere in the wilds of Western Maryland, the rugged and mountainous country that is there, is a man with a mission, our good friend Ed Wiley of Pennies of Promise. You there, Ed?
Oh, yeah. I'm here, Bob.
Good to hear from you. How's the walk going?
The walk's going great, Bob. I'm really touched from the support of people that I'm getting out here. It's been really great from Charleston all the way to here, people's beeping their horns and thumbs up, and the truckers, even the coal truck drivers, Bob, seem to have a special place in their heart for this issue with the children. And seen a lot of support. People's coming out from their porches and talking and shaking a lot of hands, Bob, and people's really giving me a lot of support out here on this issue.
Well, Ed, I haven't talked to you since the walk began. How many miles have you covered?
Well, I'm getting close to a 200 mark. I'm at the bottom of Cumberland Mountain. I'll be starting there about 10 miles flat land before I hit the top of the bottom of the Cumberland Mountain. And once I top it out, I'll have probably, roughly 5 to 6 miles are due, and I'll cross the Maryland line.
Goodness me, that's amazing. And just to let folks listening who might not be completely up to speed with what you're doing, you saw the plight of children at Marsh Fork Elementary School living in the shadows of literally cancer-causing toxic goo and chemicals and coal and breathing coal dust and living in coal filth. And you've just and since the Department of Environmental Protection and the West Virginia State Government have refused to do anything to help these children, you and you've taken it upon yourself. This was your idea. You said you're going to walk from Charleston, West Virginia, to Washington, D.C., and get some help building a school for these kids. And by God, that's what you're doing, Ed. And I got to tell you, I'm awful proud of what you are doing for these children and setting an example for other people to take activism into their own hands.
That's right, Bob. A lot of people seem to be encouraged by what I'm doing. I've met people from all walks of life on this, and from people that have money to people that absolutely don't have money. And I've walked through a lot of towns that one time was very rich in prosperity, and where the coal companies had come in and from what I can see, it's just pulled their souls away. I'm looking at buildings, Bob, along the way that's historical buildings, big, pretty, fancy stonework and things. And these towns are dead. And, I often wonder why people haven't seen this before now and reached out for something more sustainability or for the after effects of what happened with the coal industry. And I can only wish and hope and pray that for the state of West Virginia and all the Appalachian Mountains that people can see what I'm seeing out here of what's to become once a coal company comes in and then leaves. It's a shame that you can see that these buildings and the craftsmanship and the work that's went into these towns then become ghost towns. I mean, literally ghost towns. And we think we're coming to a really big town and a lot going on. And once you get to the heart of the town, there's nothing there. There's lots of closed down buildings. And, you can see it in the people's eyes and you can see it. You can see where their hearts are. They've been worn down. And, it's a shame what's going on here. And what I fear is, it's already happened. What is the future for our children, Bob? You know, we got the problem with the chemicals there at Marsh Fork, and it's just not the Marsh Fork kids, Bob, no more. It's about all the kids in the Appalachian Mountains, and it's an emotional issue for me, and it's a very serious issue. And the governor of the state of West Virginia has really, really dropped the ball on this issue, and as many hands as I've shook and as many people from all walks of life that I've talked to, and don't matter what their work skill is, if it's coal mining or a dairy farmer or just a plain person out on the street, I would be afraid to say if you was to take a vote right now, the governor is definitely, definitely losing votes. And this is going to be a sad day for West Virginia, Bob. I worry each day. I have for a long time. And I got a lot of time to think out here, Bob, on some of these mountainous roads. And I still worry today. Our children at Marsh Fork are soon going to go back to school. And
yeah, they are.
You know, it's not very long. And we have literally begged the government to do something, our local government, and even the higher brackets of government, we've asked to turn a blind eye on these children. And I walk by schools, Bob, out here, and I look and I say, well, look what a pretty place these kids are in. And I look at the creeks and the streams and the rivers around them, and they're clear and no red runoff into them, no acid water, not a lot of these streams in our areas and other parts of Appalachian, they'll treat them back in the mountains where there's a lot of activity with lime to help purify them. And it does, but the streams are real milky-looking color. And I look at these other schools out here, and I say, well, why can't Marsh Fork be like this? you know, why are these kids being sacrificed, you know, for the big shine of governor? And, you know, that's what I don't understand. You know, I do understand politics end of it, that you got to protect yourself and everything. But a simple issue of $5 million to move these little children away from a mine site that's full of toxins in the air, full of toxins that clean the coal, a 2.8 billion gallon toxic slurry dam that MSHA says it's leaking, 249 violations since 91, that's significant and substantial by MSHA, is if certain occurrences happen that this thing will break and 977 lives will be perished. And the governor will come out on the front steps of the Capitol with me and tell the people of West Virginia, tell the little children at Marsh Fork Elementary that he's going to do everything humanly possible and not second-guess the people he has working for him. And here you got these violations on this impoundment, and we've proved that there's coal dust in that school, and we all know, everybody knows, we've watched our fathers die, we've watched our grandfathers die, and their fathers before that, with just plain black lung. And now that they got these chemicals that they're cleaning this coal in, it's just sad, Bob. It's really, really sad. I mean, the governor has really dropped the ball on this one.
Well, did you get the news from earlier today, Ed? They at least refused the silo permit for the new gargantuan coal silo.
Right. I've known about that. Yes, I did hear about that, and that was a good thing. And you know, they're going to try to fight that, and the law states that this can happen within 300 feet of the schools or a stream. And you know, we're fighting the second one. We beat it. This is the third time that this issue has been brought up. How many more times do they get? A law is a law.
One would think.
It has to be signed with blood before it passes. I mean, to really.
Well, you know, the sad thing, Ed, is I think you probably know the answer to that question. This is West Virginia. And you and others like you are making heroic efforts to change things. But every change that has ever come to the coal industry in this state has been done compulsorily. Look at we had a dozen miners die in that god awful hole at Sago.
Right.
Now the coal and the legislature ran out and said, "Oh, we're going to pass us some reforms." And the coal industry is busting its hump and spending millions of dollars to keep those reforms from going through.
That's right. That's right. And what they're asking them to do to update safety and communication is a drop in the bucket. It should have been done years ago, and it's a drop in the bucket. And they're going to fight this. What they spend fighting it, they can correct the problem.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, I know. I've got friends who worked in workers' compensation. I've heard stories. People, guys, tell me that they've seen coal companies spend $10,000 to fight a $200 prescription. Okay,
that's
right. But that's the way they've always been, Ed. That's what you're up against, and I'm so proud that you stand defiant and unbowed in front of all of this, because this is the change that will save West Virginia. And you're right. It is principally it's about the kids at Marsh Fork. But beyond that, it's about a whole lot more kids too, and it's about a future.
It's about all the children in Southern Appalachian Mountains. It's about all. And Bob, I'll tell you, if we fail as parents and grandparents, we have failed as Americans to help these children in Appalachian Mountains. We have failed. We do not get this done. This is something that has to be done. Senator Byrd needs to realize this. Personally, you know my where I stand in politics. I don't give a rat's ass either way, Democrat or Republican, and I never did. I just, you know, when it comes down to it, it shouldn't matter about the children, whether you're Republican or Democrat. Both parties should care about our children.
Well, in better circumstances, it might be different, Ed. But what we have here is you've got a Republican Party that's concerned about children that aren't born yet, And you've got, in many instances in this state, and it grieves me to say it, a Democratic Party that is as far into the pockets of big coal as any Republican could want to be. I mean,
When the governor come out on the steps, and he said he would do everything humanly possible, I think somebody really needs to pinch him. This is plain as black and white. You look at the flyover pictures. You look at the issues. You look at what's going on there. It's black and white. And the governor, three other issues. One was the child abuse law. And I really do feel this is willfully and knowingly keeping these kids in harm's way. And that's child abuse. And, you know,
you're darn right. If anybody else was doing it, they would be in court.
And that's right. And he comes out there and says, I'm going to do everything humanly possible. This is not very hard of an issue. I mean, it's a matter of $5 million. And that's a lot of money. It is to people like me and other people. But the people of our state of West Virginia, they got it. The Capitol's got that money. If they could spend $1,200 on a faucet for inside the Capitol, if they got extra money to put gambling tables inside the governor's mansion, they've got money to build these little kids a new school. And if not, the governor ought to get on his motorcycle with the first lady and do what they call a poker run. He does it all the time, rides around with a group of motorcycles and raises money. Why not these children? You could say anything. We can vote on a lot of issues, Bob, but whatever they get up there in front of the camera and tell the public is what we get. And whether we like it or not, it's exactly what we get. He could get up there and say something to save these little children's lives. And it's going to be a bad day in West Virginia. It's going to be a sad day in West Virginia. And I called the governor's office today, and I talked to his personal secretary. And I told her these very words. It's going to be a sad day in West Virginia if something happens to one of these little children. It's going to be a bad black eye on West Virginia if something bad happens out there at this site or any other site in West Virginia. And the governor needs to step up and pick the ball up on this. He's dropped the ball, and he's dropped the ball, and he's dropped the ball.
Well, somewhere along the way, somebody's telling him to ignore you guys. I mean, you realize that, don't you?
Well, Bob, he thought we was going to go away. He thought we was a bunch of holler hicks that didn't have no education and was just going to come in there with an issue and walk away. And I'll tell you, Bob, if I got to go up there to D.C. and turn around and come back and start shaking hands again, I'm willing to make this walk back to West Virginia. And I'll turn right around and go back again, Bob. I got it in me, and I will shake every hand. I will take a different route until I crisscross West Virginia and get this issue solved for these children. The governor is definitely losing votes out here, I'm telling you.
And for folks outside of West Virginia that care about this issue, that might want to see Marsh Fork Elementary, there's photographs at crmw.net. at ohvecovec.org,
right.
Penniesofpromise.org.
Right.
The opportunity is there for people to educate themselves on this issue because, again, this is the beginning of something. This is about protecting an entire generation of children, as you say, Ed.
I'm handing out a lot of flyers, Bob. I got flyers I hand out. I got flyers I put on mailbox. I'm not missing nobody. I stop and talk and shake a lot of hands, and I'm handing out flyers. I'm giving people the website, and I tell them what I'm doing, and they just take it in. They just unbelievable that this is happening to our children. And I always tell the people, Bob, you know, if you can't make a donation, if you cannot get me a presentation, if you cannot come out and walk a mile for these children, there's a toll-free number on there. Educate yourself with the pamphlet. Go to the website, just like you said. Educate yourself and call the governor's office and tell him that I've come by and shook your hand and talked to you about this issue and give the governor your 2 cents worth on this issue. And from what I'm finding out, the governor is getting an awful lot of calls at this point.
Wouldn't happen to have the number handy, would you?
Well, I do, but I'm sitting outside and it's getting dark on the back of my
head. Well, I tell you what, we'll find it, Ed, and put it out there for folks. We're running up against the top of the hour. I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Well, Bob, I appreciate everything you and your family's doing, and I hope is it your father that's gotten ill here lately?
Yeah. Doing some better, though.
Okay, I really wish and pray for the best of him, and I know a lot of people's out there praying for this issue to resolve, and I can only hope that the governor can come to his senses and help these children at the Marsh Fork Elementary.
It would be nothing to fire up the school building authority and make it happen, Ed. It would be next to nothing.
It's a sad situation, Bob. It really is. It's a shame that we've had to go to this extreme. And like I said, whatever it takes in Washington, I'm going to do. I'm working on Senator Byrd every day and hope to meet with the senator. I think the senator, you know, a lot of people have mixed feelings of the senator and his politics, but if you look at Mr. Byrd's record, you know, he's done a lot for his life, you know, and he has brought in a lot of money for West Virginia, and Byrd can help these children. You can't hurt his politics, and it's not going to hurt him to rock the boat on this issue. And I believe he really, deep in his heart, that he comes from the old school back, you know, from the old timers days, and I believe deep in his heart that he's a true Appalachian, and somewhere in his heart that maybe he can pull it out to find a place to pass a bill that this never, ever happens again to any school or any of these children in the Appalachian Mountains. And
I tell you what, Ed, with folks with courage and spirit like you behind it, I think you've already succeeded.
We're going to get this done for the kids, Bob. We're going to get it done. We're going to get it done for the people of Appalachian Mountain. That's for sure.
Thank you, Ed.
Okay, Bob. Thank you.
Take care. Walk safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our good friend, Ed Wiley. Go to penniesofpromise.org. Go to crmw.net. Go to ohvec.org. See the school that he's talking about. See the moonscapes that Big Coal scatters across the Appalachian Mountains. See the devastation of a colonial economy. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is a quality news network. Israeli forces began pulling out of southern Lebanon today. One official estimated the whole process could take up to 10 days. 15,000 Lebanese troops are expected to begin arriving south of the Litani River on Thursday. Meanwhile, officials say UN peacekeeping officials will move into non-critical areas over the next 2 days. The total peacekeeping force is expected to number about 15,000. In northern Israel, residents emerged from bomb shelters, while in southern Lebanon, approximately 200,000 displaced residents returned to the area. In London, British police have detained a new suspect in the alleged plot to blow up airplanes over the Atlantic. It's the first arrest in the case. The other suspects are still in custody. A judge will hold a meeting tomorrow to determine whether to continue holding them. British air carriers estimate the terrorist plot has cost them $570 million. There have been hundreds of canceled and delayed flights at airports around Britain. In Iraq today, more than a dozen people were killed in scattered violence. Officials have ordered an indefinite curfew in the Shiite holy city of Karbala. In Gaza City, Palestinian security forces are searching for two Fox News journalists who were abducted yesterday. No one has claimed responsibility and no demands have been made. In Ohio, terror charges have been dropped against the two Michigan men who had purchased a large number of disposable cell phones. Prosecutors say they couldn't prove the men are linked to terrorist activity. In Mississippi, a judge has ruled that a couple cannot collect damages from their insurance company for flood damage after Hurricane Katrina because it was not included in their policy. If the couple had won, it would have set a precedent for hundreds of others whose homes were damaged. In Pennsylvania, Hispanic groups are suing the city of Hazleton, saying the illegal immigration ordinance that passed last month is illegal. Landlords who rent to illegal immigrants face fines, and employers could lose their business licenses. The city's mayor passed the ordinance after two illegal immigrants were charged with murder. In Mexico City, the streets around Congress were blocked by protesters as they continued calling for a full, not partial, vote recount in the disputed presidential election. Earlier, eight demonstrators were injured in clashes with riot police. And in Minnesota, former President Gerald Ford has been admitted to the Mayo Clinic. No other details are available. You're listening to QNN.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A new Census Bureau report shows that minority populations are growing in all states but one, West Virginia. Immigrants, both legal and illegal, now make up about 12% of the U.S. population. The housing market continues to slow, with 28 states, including California, Florida, and Arizona, reporting declines in spring sales. The Labor Department reports that in July, overall wholesale prices went up by 0.1%. Excluding food and fuel prices, those level prices fell 0.3% for the month. For the first time in more than a decade, Walmart's quarterly profit has fallen. The company blames the drop on costs associated with selling its stores in Germany. The World Bank expects China's economy to expand 10.4% this year, a jump from its previous forecast of 9.5%. Growth next year is expected to be 9.3%. Billionaire Nelson Peltz has purchased 1.2% of the Tribune Company, which publishes the Chicago Tribune and Los Angeles Times. Peltz is known as an activist investor. 3M has announced a $1 billion stock buyback plan. The company plans to use the money for corporate purposes. And Bayer Pharmaceuticals reports fourth quarter earnings of more than $82 million. Light sweet crude settled today at $73.05. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 132 points, NASDAQ up 57 points, S&P up 19. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, let's keep it rolling. 7.5 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob, and I likes the telephone. Let's go talk to Roy. Roy, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Doing good, Roy. You?
I'm great. Doing good.
Well, wonderful, wonderful. What's happening in Roy's world?
Oh, just tickled to death watching the Repub squirmer round and everything over Joe Lieberman, and then the bomb plot in Britain was hurried. For Bush. So,
do they think we don't see this stuff, Roy? Honestly, do they think we don't see this stuff?
They think we're ignorant.
Well, that could no. But, I mean, they know their followers are ignorant. Is that the only people they're playing to?
Well, no, they're playing to the chicken shit, the 21% of the nation that is just scared to death about anything and will listen to whatever.
That little cancerous knot of Bush voters who hate America so much.
Yeah. So, but anyhow, it's just, you know, they have used it before, try to scare everybody, scare these 21% to death. But the from what everything you read and see, and I watched Keith Olbermann just a bit ago on MSNBC's Countdown, and he's reporting it every day of how the British didn't want to arrest those people, but Bush convinced them of it.
Well, I can see a situation where you wouldn't want, you know, don't arrest them. Sit there and watch them. See what they're doing.
Well, it says now, Olbermann reported this afternoon, that they wind up turning them loose because they don't have nothing to charge them with. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, but Bush wanted it hurried up and get that headline to Lieberman off of the air and newspapers so they could go back to scaring the chicken shit.
Well, I fear, you know, no, I don't fear it. I know you're right. Okay.
But it leads
me back to the same old question I keep asking, Roy. Could it possibly be that we have made a profound mistake in thinking that these people were some kind of evil geniuses what it turns out is that they're just common street thugs and not very smart at that?
Well, they're common street thugs. And, there's a Republican in New York. He's trying to pull the same tactics that they did against Max Chambliss in Georgia. Now he's wanting to compare Hillary with Bin Laden. And, I mean, you know, the guy ain't even...
When everybody knows that Hillary is 10 times as mean as Osama bin Laden... Lord, there's a reason he hides in that cave.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just amazing how dumb they think we are.
It is. And it tells me about how intelligent they are, Roy. It honest to God does.
But you're exactly right. Common street thug is all they are.
And all they know is to scare us, you know. Oh, look, I got a gun. Look, I got a knife. Or they got a knife. Or they got a gun. Mm-hmm. Are you scared yet?
Yeah, yeah.
That makes me. And the sad thing is, there are people in this country that, you know, maybe it's still 20%, 25%, 30%. But I'm ashamed, Roy. I'm honest to God ashamed that number is that high.
It's ridiculous.
You know, Greg Palast pointed out something that I've pointed out a few times in the past as well. And that is that Al-Qaeda hasn't said a word about us, if indeed it is Al-Qaeda. You know, after all, that only means database in Arabic.
Yeah.
But when the towers went down and Osama explained what his beef was with us, he said basically that what he wanted was for U.S. troops to get off of holy sacred Saudi soil or sand or whatever. And you know what? George Bush, being the coward that he is, I mean, this is, after all, the same guy who said, I'm going to apologize to the Chinese, and damn it, if they don't give our plane back, I'm going to apologize to them again. Oh, it doesn't matter. I'll apologize as many times as I have to. I'll get on the ground if I... And so, you know, Osama issued his demands. We got out of Saudi. We're not in Saudi anymore, and we haven't heard a peep out of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
That's what it was about. You know, this, frankly, again, I refuse to be a moron, Roy.
I'm not going to be a moron.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of choice. I'm pro-choice. I choose not to be a moron. And as a consequence of that, you know, all this business, you know, they use this language, and I'm glad this conversation kind of went this way. You know, when they uncovered the deadly bomb plot, and it was going to be, and they used fancy phrases like binary explosives. You know, that kept running through my mind and running through my mind and running through my mind, Roy. And I finally realized where I had seen something. And every time something like this happens, I can flash back and realize that these guys are just stealing from the popular culture. Because I was wandering around YouTube one day. You know what YouTube.com is?
Yeah.
You know, where you can get video clips and stuff. And my kids had heard about something. They said, Dad, you got to go find this. So we went looking on YouTube, and we found this video, and it's apparently turned into a craze all over the world where you get a roll of Mentos, and you let them fall into a 2-liter bottle of Diet Coke. Now, you know what Mentos are. You know what Diet Coke is.
Yeah.
Well, apparently it makes it just foam and fountain like crazy.
Okay.
And that's what I read. Somebody somewhere, you know, these incredibly paranoid little goobers that work for the National Security Administration have heard a couple of kids in Arabic talking about, oh, did you see it the other day when I dropped those Mentos into that Diet Coke? It went boom all over the place. Wouldn't that make the big explosion? And that's what we're terrifying the nation over. Mentos and Diet Coke.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I can't wait to try it myself. I'm going to go out in the yard, me, the kids. We're going to have our little Mr. Science experiment. Try not to get any.
Yeah.
Don't want to get any of it on the car because we all know that Coca-Cola eats paint.
Yeah. Well, but from all indications, I've told you before, I read that New York Times every day online, and they're out ahead of everybody reporting it. And it's just not selling this time, and I hope to God it don't.
Well, I hope you're right.
All the...
I think maybe the American people are fed up and wised up.
Yeah. Well.
Or at least a significant majority of them are.
There's been some type of a movement, and I wouldn't even know what it is, but. It just kind of creeping up and getting more and more prevalent every day is, hey, who's been in charge the last 6 years?
Yeah, sooner or later you got to get around to that question, don't you?
Yeah. Are you safer than you was 6 years ago? And somebody's going, duh.
Now, is that Texan, Roy?
What?
Is that a Texan word? Duh.
Well, my hometown, I'm from a little bitty place. I think the population now is listed as 6. But anyhow, I was raised in a little tiny community called Trickham, Texas.
Okay.
And but that still don't mean I'm a moron and a goober.
And, no.
<that.
laughs> No, I got an idea. The bushes in the world got to get up pretty daggum early in the morning to get the better of you, Roy.
Well, I hope so.
All right. You take care. Good talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Our good friend Roy from Texas. Man, we've had Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana, West Virginia. This little network's kind of growing, isn't it? It's 17 minutes past the hour. I have a sense that we should probably take a break. When we come back, we've got more phone calls. Heck, we may have to go an extra hour. I kid. But we will. We'll get to your phone calls. And, of course, if you want to jump in, we've got lines open, too, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is Conversation Radio.
I thought I saw a man brought to life. He was warm, he came around like he was dignified. He showed me what it was to cry. Well, you couldn't be that man I adore. You don't seem to know, seem to care what your heart is for. Well, I don't know him anymore. There's nothing where he used to lie. The conversation has run dry.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now. Yes, I will.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Bruce Burke's radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only do we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, girl.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total cap.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio. This is great.
This is great. So, do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Burke, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
Catchiest anti-war tune I think I've ever heard. That's our good friend Will Kimbrough from American Itis. If you don't have the album, you should have the album. It's genius, pure and simple. 22 minutes after the hour, and to the phones. Dave calling from Humboldt County. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, I'm a recent convert to the Horn Radio. I had followed Guy James for a long time and think the world of him, but your monitor is able to get me on with Bruce, and now I'm able to listen to you. So
wonderful. Glad to have you aboard.
Well, I really feel an obligation as much as possible to help, to try to wise the world up as to what we're up against. And my own views, I say they're pretty extreme, because what I see is outrage beyond comprehension. I don't think they're just common thugs, nor do I think that they are evil geniuses. I think that they are criminals beyond comprehension. They put together a master plan more than a dozen years ago when they first started with TNAC.
Right.
And it extends right up to what we've got today. I don't think for a minute that Israel is some freelance operator out there doing the thing on Lebanon. They're in bed with...
No, well, Seymour Hersh says exactly the contrary, Dave. Seymour Hersh says that Israel was a little test tube. Israel's invasion of Lebanon and the concerted bombing campaign was, at least according to Mr. Hersh, designed specifically to find out if a massive air campaign could, in fact, neutralize hardened underground facilities in anticipation of our invasion of Iran.
But is the PNAC plan that they are going to take control of all the oil of the Middle East? By one pretext or another, by one invasion here and another occupation. It hasn't gone as smoothly as they would have liked, but they don't care about people that get harmed in the process. It'll hurt them and bother them if they can't supply enough troops to maintain what they're trying to steal. But
well, when you look at the global implications of all of this stuff, Dave, what you'll find out is that it's like a spider web. It doesn't run along a line. It branches off, and everything touches everything else. If you've ever seen a spider respond to, you know, like a little gnat flying into the far corner of the web, he knows. And that same web-like mentality obtains in all of this. It's not necessarily about taking the oil. Again, it's about controlling the oil.
Correct.
It's about controlling the Chinese economy. Because frankly, if the Chinese and to a lesser extent India have free access to Middle Eastern oil on the level that they're going to need in the very near future, we are in a word screwed.
Well, you know, the spider web analogy may bring us back to the thought of what a weary web we weave when first we practice to deceive, because that's all these cons do. They cannot for a minute begin to admit we're here to exploit you and as much of the world as we can. We are here to take whatever we can for ourselves and take it away from you. No, that would be them being honest. They can't be that. So it's lie on top of lie. It's levels of deception.
And even if we don't get the war started with Iran anytime soon, something again that Greg Palast pointed out that I thought was very valid, Lebanon and Israel created a lot of jitters. Oil prices went up. George Bush could have told Israel to stop. George Bush didn't. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia could have told Hamas to stop. King Abdullah didn't. Ahmadinejad of Iran could have told Hezbollah to stop. Ahmadinejad did not do it. And the thing is, every time something like this happens, if it starts getting calm, if you're paying attention, Dave, when it starts getting calm, all of a sudden you'll see somebody come out, one of those three groups, somebody over there will rattle the saber, and the oil bourse in New York suddenly goes, Jesus, and the price of oil spikes a couple of bucks a barrel, and the next thing you know, Exxon's declaring another quarter of just monstrous horse-gagging profits.
So we're paying $3.20 a gallon for fuel, and if they wanted to go up and up, because the board of directors of these oil companies made $7-8 billion last year, and that's more than a coincidence. We're paying through the nose, and they're making mega bucks. This Alaskan pipeline, I bet you're enough of an engineer to know that if you knew you had a corrosion occurring over a period of several miles, you would lay a pipe down right beside it, manufacture a pipe there, and bring it up to the full length of that corrosion. You'd then only have to shut it down long enough to connect it in.
Yeah, I'm not an engineer, Dave, but I'm enough of a homeowner to know that.
Yes, but if they decide to wait until, we've got to shut it all down now for several months, and unfortunately that will raise the price yet another $2. See, they're getting the oil out of Iraq for practically nothing, and Afghanistan. They're not paying the people. They're not paying the government. They're getting it for almost just the price of drilling and the price of refining it. So the cost of the gasoline to them is probably 50 or 60 cents. So they're making $2.80 a gallon profit. It's an outrage. The people of this country are taking it badly.
Well, and the question I've got to ask, though, Dave, I agree. It's an outrage. It sets my hair on fire. We're at the point in this family now that we really do make conscious decisions about, do we spend on gasoline or do we spend on food, and how much is the power bill this month, and are we going to be able to get it all paid? Those are very real calculations for this family. As a consequence of that, though, I have to ask, because I haven't seen any less driving when I'm out there. Is it $4 a gallon gas that gets the rages, the outrage and the agony? Is it $5, $6? At what point do the American people, Dave, come out and demand some accountability from these SOBs?
Well, it's going to hurt different people at different levels. I'm sure that gas already was very, very painful for some people that were barely struggling without it doubling and tripling under the Bush administration. So some people are hurting badly. I would love to see this country invest whatever it would take to get a prosecutor, a DA somewhere to charge this White House with the crimes that they have committed and to have them taken out in handcuffs and brought to prison. They should not be running any country anywhere. They should be serving time for the crimes that they do. I don't know how we'll accomplish it, but I think that's what we got to be putting our heads on. To fail to hold them accountable is to have this country go down a rat hole like crazy.
Well, I think you're right. And my particular twist on this, Dave, is that the only hope we have is November. And I'm not talking about November 2008. I'm talking about November 2006. And, yes, we are up against it. And, yes, there are Diebold machines. And, yes, there's the ES&S. And, yes, there's Sequoia. And frankly, your vote may not be counted, but if you stay home because you think it won't be, it damn sure won't be.
Well, of the voting machines, there's one big hope there. Sequoia is now owned by Venezuela.
That is true.
They will not rig one vote for the cons. That won't happen. They might do what they could to offset the craziness that they do with their voting machines. But I do not see Hugo Chavez saying, let's try to throw this to the cons. That wouldn't happen.
Well, the point I'm trying to get at is our one chance is in November.
Mm-hmm.
Our one chance is a retake, and I hope folks won't be mad at me for repeating myself on this. I think it deserves to be said again and again and again. Give the Democrats a majority in both houses of Congress, and then immediately, the day after the election, build a bonfire that is huge and make it white hot and hold their little feet to that fire and say, now that they're hot, run on them.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree. I think you got an excellent program, Bob, and I will be a listener whenever I'm able.
Well, thank you, Dave. I do appreciate it. I enjoy hearing from you, and I hope we'll hear from you again.
Well, I'll make it a point of it.
All right. You take care now.
Thanks.
Bye now. Again, and it's not rocket science. I despise the Republicans. I loathe the Republicans. I would, in many instances, go so far as to say that I hate them, okay, because I tried not to. It goes against the upbringing that I had from my dear departed mother to say that I hate somebody. But you know what? This isn't something I came on easy. I was taught this, okay? I was schooled on this, brought through it class by class by class by the Ann Coulters and the Sean Hannitys and the Neil Bortzes and the Flush Flimballs and the O'Reillys and the Savages and the Becks. I have been schooled on this. I have learned to loathe these sons of bitches, okay? I mean, they are what they are. I apologize for the language because I really, really try to have a better vocabulary than that because we are better than them. But I reach a point in this process where I don't know how else. What do you do? You walk in the house and the dude with the black toboggan and the black sweater and the black pants and the black brothel creepers has got the family silver under your arm and he's headed out the door. What do you do? That's the Republican Party in America today. Pure and simple. And I know, we're less than 100 days from the election. So the weird freaks that have been out there doing weird, freaky, Republican things for the last 10, 12 years are scared. And now, well, you know, there's a goober running against Alan Mollahan in the first congressional district in West Virginia. And you can't get him to put he will not be caught dead mentioning George Bush's name in any of his political advertising. The same thing goes the country over. You know, we've got a candidate. I mentioned him before, Mike Callahan, MikeWV.com. And this guy's running a credible campaign against Tom DeLay's best girl. Shelley Moore Capito of the 2nd Congressional District in West Virginia took more money from Tom DeLay than any other congressman in the nation, with the exception of one. That should qualify her to be painted and absolutely tarred, feathered, and run out of town on a rail and sent back to wherever it is Moors go when their political careers are over. Okay, prison's not an option yet. It's where her daddy went. But these things need to be known. And there are credible races all over this country. And we've got to be energized in every one of those districts. And I know that sounds hard, but this is the only chance you get. 2008 does not matter worth a damn without you put the House and the Senate back in Democratic hands come November. Rick Santorum's out there, so desperate out there, he's signed a gay tolerance pledge. Remember Rick, man on dog sex Santorum? Yeah, signed a gay tolerance pledge. And then there's, let's go to this one real quick. Something I really want to make sure that you get to hear. If you haven't heard it on another program, I want to run it because it just boggles my mind. One of the other Republican creeps who's doing everything in his power. George Bush? Who the hell's George Bush? Wasn't he president once upon a time? George Bush? I don't know no George Bush. Man, I'm an independent, free-thinking Republican. Bush? I don't know no Bush. So George Allen is at a campaign event in Brakes, Virginia. I think that qualifies as Appalachia. Sure it does. And he's down there. And apparently his competition, a man named Webb, has a young man following him around and videotaping. And he's videotaping George Allen just because, you know, George Allen is a racist. He's unreconstructed. He's just a nasty, just nasty. And the young man happens to have skin a little bit darker than George's. And so at this political clavern meeting that the Republicans are having there in Brakes, George addresses the young man videotaping him directly. This is the face of moderate Republicanism on display.
We're going to run this campaign on positive, constructive ideas. And it's important that we motivate and inspire people for something. This fellow here over here with the yellow shirt, Macaca, or whatever his name is, He's with my opponent. He's following us around everywhere.
Macaca?
And it's just great. We're going to places all over Virginia. And he's having it on film, and it's great to have you here. And you show it to your opponent because he's never been there and probably will never come. So it's good for him.
Woohoo! USA! USA!
Probably living inside the Beltway, or his opponent actually right now is with a bunch of Hollywood movie moguls. We care about fact, not fiction. So welcome. Let's give a welcome to Macaca here.
Twice.
Welcome to America and the real world.
Welcome to America and the real world.
My friends, we're in the midst of a war on terror.
Welcome to America. Let's welcome Macaca. Welcome to the real world. Welcome to America. And what's the next phrase, boys and girls? What do we use when we gotta really stir up the knuckle draggers and work up the mouth breathers? That's right. We got us a war on terror. And let's welcome Macaca to America. Macaca, as it turns out, well, he's a young man named S.R. Siddharth. He was born in America, George Allen, you rotten, pasty-faced, doughy, bug-eyed freak. You soulless Republican, you. You racist! You bigot! This is part of it. You heard that song a little bit ago. Less polite. It's time for polite to be over. George Allen is a racist and a bigot. And he later on, well, I was calling him Macaca because I was talking fast and I was referring to his mohawk hairdo. Now, go have a look. I think it's over at Crooks and Liars, maybe. You can go and look at this young man's hair, his mohawk hairdo. His hair behaves better than mine does. And it in no wise resembles anything that you could even get close to calling a mohawk. This is racism. When you see it, you must be willing to call it. Now, I don't know how much Mr. Webb... Is it Mr. Webb? Yeah. James Webb. I don't know how much he's got in his campaign coffers, but by God, he needs more, because that should be run all over the state of Virginia, and it should just say, George Allen, bigot, U.S. Senate. George Allen, racist, U.S. Senate. By God, make him run on whether or not he is a bigot and a racist for the rest of the campaign, because he is. And even most bigots and racists will not support one because they don't like having people know it. In this day and age, unless, of course, you're out there tormenting people for how they have sex, being overtly bigoted against somebody for the color of their skin isn't something that you can openly talk about. It's just something that goes on, you know, in church and at home and over the dinner table. Macaca. Macaca. What the hell is macaca? Not all, you know, and that's the nice thing. Senator Allen is proving himself true to form on all four corners where Republican racism is concerned. Because he's not only a racist, he's not only a bigot. He's ignorant! Macaca? That's either a monkey or a city in South Africa. Welcome to America, Macaca. We got us a war on terror. See, you've heard that. Got any friends in Virginia? See if you can do some email listing or something. Get out, you know, help. This man, we do not have any room in the Senate for bigots. A couple of years ago, what was it, the Senate tried to pass a sense of the Senate resolution? Apologizing for failing to respond to lynching, and the Republican Party couldn't be bothered to vote in favor of it. Yeah. Let's go to the phones real quick. Jethro is calling. Oh, no. Okay. Gene is calling. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, good. I'm doing. Macaca kind of rings up there with a chewy haircut. Anyway. Pastoral reference.
No, I understand.
Just real quick, you had asked about the gas prices, and I think, according to what I think is, when this whole thing first started, everybody was saying, oh, it's all going to go to heck once it goes to $4 a gallon. I think people are still waiting for it to get to $4, and after that, they'll all go berserk.
Well, I don't know. I don't know at what point that happens. I honest to God don't know, Gene.
I don't know, but, you know, I just think psychologically we're kind of trained to go, we'll tolerate it up to four, and then it's like, it kind of...
See, I keep wondering if maybe five's the benchmark. You know, that's a fin, that's a sawbuck.
That might be. So, you know, that was all I really wanted to mention, because I thought, gee, that, what is it going to take? Because $3 a gallon is... Well, $3 a gallon is too high, but at least from my way of thinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know the feeling. Gene, thank you so much.
See ya.
Have a good night.
Bye.
And by the way, in case you were wondering, straight to the phones here in a second, when they gave him an opportunity, when they gave Allen an opportunity to say, you know, I never should have said that, he said, Allen did, I would never want to demean him as an individual. I apologize if he's offended by that. That was no way the point. Get that. Now, wait. It's English class here, okay? I would never mean to demean him as an individual. If, on the other hand, I was demeaning him as a member of a racial group, well, that's okay. Because I'm a Republican, and that is what we do. Let's go to Wayne. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Okay. I completely lost my train of thought.
Oops.
I had a whole point here I was going to make. But,
did it get derailed?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I could get back on it.
Okay.
I mean, you got to expect. Oh, well, now I got it back, see?
Okay.
Here's the thing, man. London Bridge is falling down.
Falling down.
Humpty Dumpty is falling off the wall. You know, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. So we have to be prepared for this thing. And it's really a great thing because these people are self-exploding. You know, what's his name? George Allen?
Yeah.
He will expose himself more and more as a racist. You know, everything you said is absolutely true. And this is what I'm trying to say is we have to be prepared. For these people are scared to death. They are going to lose. And we have to start taking advantage of what they say in this frenzied realization that they're all done.
Yeah.
And that a lot of them may be facing jail time. Now, you know.
And they will do
desperate.
These
guys never subscribe to the old school thing that don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Yeah, that's right, Beretta.
There you go, brother. Now, I'm telling you, now that's the truth.
Oh, I don't doubt
They're
it.
They're going to start ratting each other. I mean, it's going to be wonderful. But we have to play it right. And don't be shocked. And don't be amazed, you know. And, you know, a little further, we may, you know, you've alluded to in the past, we may need those 30 million people on the White House lawn.
Yeah,
you know,
we may.
I'm ready to go.
Sure. And the thing is, well, you know, you talk about being scared. The one thing that, you know, I don't run around being terrified. I don't run around, you know, Jesus, is there a Muslim around here for me to be scared of? I don't live my life that way, Wayne. But you know what? These people in their rabid animal in the corner nature that I think you've just described, I don't know what they would allow to happen to the American people in order to try to preserve their power. And that does scare me, Wayne.
Well, death. It certainly hasn't been a problem.
No.
Has it? I mean, you know, they'll send young kids to die for, I don't know, whatever they think they're doing.
Yeah, well, you know, fighting for freedom because they hate our home mortgages. Yeah,
yeah, right, exactly.
But, I mean, you know, and we saw them try it last week. And, you know, then there was George Bush and the man from Uncle.
With the Lamont thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
but see, that didn't work, Wayne, and that's what scares me. That didn't work, so that means they're going to have to ratchet it up another notch.
Bob, these people are hell-bent on invading Iran. And, you know, how much do you think they're going to do to support this ceasefire?
Nothing.
They didn't want it in the beginning, and they don't want it now. And they will use Israel and tell Israel, here's what you do, and we're going to blame it on you. And, you know, the Israelis will say, okay. You know, they're capable. They, you know, I would predict that these people are going to invade Iraq or Iran or Syria. Maybe Syria we'll start with before the election. And I think we have to be prepared for that. And that's where the 30 million people have to show up on the White House lawn when they do that.
I can pack a picnic lunch. I can feed a couple of people. You know, I'm serious. You know, we plan. You know, you're right. We got to be prepared for this and show up meaning to stay. This isn't one of those where you show up on Saturday and then you go away Sunday and Rush Limbaugh says, well, you know, they claimed they had 200,000, but it was only 20,000. No, stay long enough to get counted.
Right, yeah, and don't tell me, oh, that was this Monday? I thought that was next Monday. See, I wrote it down here in my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't need excuses.
No.
And it's going to come to that. It really is going to come to that. These are very, very frightened people. And frightened people are very dangerous. And we just have to keep that in mind. you know, the sanatorium. Well, he should be in a sanatorium or something. But that guy and Alan from Virginia, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They're all
Lieberman.
Scared now.
Yeah.
So.
You know, but there's stuff we got to deal with. I was reading something today, and again, we got to remember, Wayne, it's an uphill, it is an uphill fight. There is nothing given. We've got a hell, we are playing against the House, and the House has the odds. I mean, among other things, I found out today that one of the Democrats in the Senate that is refusing to support Ned Lamont, you know, the Democratic nominee for Senate from Connecticut, Ned Lamont,
is
David Pryor from Arkansas, who is vice chairman of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, whose mission statement says it is to get Democrats elected in every election.
What's he, Manuel's right-hand boy or something?
This guy is a Democratic senator from Arkansas who is in a safe seat, and he will not come out and support the Democratic Senate nominee from Connecticut.
Where's Manuel from, Illinois?
Oh, Rahm Emanuel, he's from Illinois, but this is the Senate counterpart, and this guy is supposed to be working to elect Democrats. Now, Charles Schumer is the head of that committee, and I think Charles Schumer needs to get some emails and phone calls asking him why he hasn't brought David Pryor into line.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right on that point. Charles Schumer, is not my first vote, but that's another story. I think things are changing, man. I think they are,
but I think you are well taken in your point that we must be prepared to watch desperate people act in desperate fashion.
Yeah, we do have to be prepared for that. And not let them fool us into a thing, well, you know, you got to support us now. We've just started another war. You know, blah, 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 blah. Baloney.
Yeah.
Time to stop.
Yeah, no more wars.
No more.
You know, I mean, that's another way. No, you don't get to start another one. We're going to preemptively stop you from preemptively starting one.
There you go.
Something
and, you know.
Yeah.
The people have the power. The people have the power. So, exactly. I'm going to get off here, brother.
All right. Take care, Wayne. Good talking to you, man.
Okay, man.
Later.
Bye.
And I'm trying to wedge in as many as I can. Jethro? Jethro, welcome to the program.
Live, it's insanity gone mad.
It's madness, I tell you, madness.
I tell you. So where do you start? Iraq, you know, they're moving all the troops into Baghdad. Going to weaken all the other areas, let them rearm, re-strength, and of course...
Well, did you see the story about the Alaska troops, Jethro?
Yeah, they just left a little while ago, now they're going back.
Yeah, they've been home for less than 3 months, and they just got told they're going back.
You know, I was in the service a long time ago, and that's a screw job, and the morale that the morale loss that is going to be in that unit, unreasonable. Yeah, and Pace is in there saying today, well, now more troops would stabilize the situation in Iraq, but it's too late for that.
Yeah,
it's lost.
It's well, and the thing is, you know, when you're sending people back after a 3 month break at home. You know, that hardly qualifies as shore leave, you know. And what it tells you is that, you know, Hillary asked Rummy last week about whether or not the military was broken. And this proves that the military is broken. When you cannot let a group stay home for at least a year, that means you got a problem. When you can't let them come home and stay home, period, and rotate somebody else in, no matter how filthy the war is, I mean, I'm just sitting here playing logistics, that means you got huge, huge problems.
And, you know, doing that to them, yeah, that's just going to increase the number of guys that are going to come back with post-traumatic stress syndrome, and they're going to need counseling, and probably the VA will have doped up on some kind of psych medication for the rest of their lives. I'm sorry. And, you know, now here I am reading again that the death toll is really over 10,000, and the wounded is over 25. And they're claiming that, you know, they're going to come out with more proof, and it's all concerning the troops that are dying after they leave Iraq that have not been counted. And they're claiming that a lot more caskets have landed there at Lansdorf Air Force Base and I think Dover, Delaware, is it, than what they're letting on.
Right.
So we'll see how that works out. But you know, this... this destruction, moving on to the other catastrophe strategically and foreign policy-wise that we were behind. I mean, it has to be our planning.
Oh, you mean Israel?
The Israelis couldn't they couldn't have planned the Lebanese thing. You know, I think we planned it the way it turned out. I mean, this is a strategic, a political, and kind of a moral victory for Hezbollah, I think, and the Lebanese people. Yeah, there's a lot of destruction and stuff there, but, you know, to those people, Hezbollah is now the heroes.
Yeah.
Nasrallah, he's going to become a hero and a leader. Hezbollah becomes strengthened, not wicked. And I was reading Robert Fisk, and he was saying this deal, these reports of the Israeli army racing north to the Litani River, he said that wasn't happening. They were meeting fierce resistance in all these towns that Hezbollah had been dug in. They had, they were using like Japanese tactics from Iwo Jima and stuff, he was saying. And they were dug in and ready to fight to the death.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jethro, it's kind of jokingly that you say it sometime that it's madness. But this is full scale, certifiable, quantifiable, diagnosable, crazy.
Right.
I mean, this is like get them off the streets before they hurt themselves crazy.
Right. And these invincible Merkaba tanks, I think they had some kind of new anti-tank weapon, and they took out quite a few of these Merkaba tanks. And I just think that's the Israeli military, just like the United States military, is now weakened in the eyes of the world, not strengthened. So to me, especially strategically, this is a victory for the people of Lebanon.
Well, you know, nobody else has ever succeeded in holding back the Israelis before.
Exactly. And so, this was all intended to either drag Syria and Iran into the war or give us a reason to attack them, you know, or to humiliate them. And all that backfired. And so what now? How are we going to attack Iran now? How are we going to get there? Is there going to be another staged attack? Some catastrophe, some...
Well, you know, if you follow the neocon stuff, Dear Leader was at some NCTC or so. There's a picture up at whitehouse.gov. It looks like he's sitting on a game show panel in the Man from U.N.C.L.E. Control room or something. It's just weird looking, and he came out and he did some babbling. But the what it boils down to is, you know, where next? Where next is August 22nd, because all the neocon right-wing garbage says, you know, oh, well, Ahmadinejad has said that we're really going to find out on August 22nd, and that, you know, and that's because he's a crazy religious fanatic.
Yeah, and speaking of crazy religious fanatics, all the Christians are secretly praying, yeah, I hope it, you know, the end really comes on August the 22nd. You know, they're praying fervently for something to happen to force Jesus to come back and take care of business.
Going to drag him kicking and screaming, Jethro.
The only problem with that is it's a mythology and it's never going to happen. That's the only problem with that deal. It's not going to happen. There's going to be no coming back.
No. No, you don't.
In my opinion.
No.
You know? And I don't know. This whole deal is crazy.
Well, you know, the question was just put, Jethro. Is it $3? I put it. Gene said $4 a gallon. I said maybe $5. What about when oil is not purchasable at any price?
Right. Well, and not only is the gas price going up, but everything else is going up. You know, the items, milk, everything is going up. Anything you want to go buy, it seems like it's gone up quite a bit. And when's it going to stop? When are the people going to wake up and figure out that all this is a big, all this